Are you searching for the best in online black radio? Then go to blacktalkradionetwork.com, helping you filter through the noise. Real talk, black talk.
The internet is full of half-truths and all-out lies. We've all seen them, and many people on social media complaining about it. Here's your chance to show improve. WorldAfropedia.com is a black-owned and operated encyclopedia. There are several thousand articles, but we need help. We can't uncover all the truth ourselves. So please, join us and become a writer, editor, or blogger for WorldAfropedia.com today. Every little bit counts. We owe it to the future generations to put the truth out there. Visit WorldAfropedia.com, the African-centered encyclopedia, a global database of African knowledge for the purpose of bringing about global African wisdom and understanding. WorldAfropedia.com.
Harassment and graffiti every day at work.
And tonight,
they are disturbing claims against a Dallas business. Two black employees say they're exposed to racist harassment and graffiti every day at work.
And tonight they filed a federal lawsuit claiming management lets it continue. Jason Whiteley reports.
Mods up.
Oh, God.
Race again at the forefront in America. Confederate statues coming down. Kneeling at NFL games.
I just want to be treated fairly. You know, and everybody else does.
Something that two African Americans say they still experience every day at work.
When I first got there, they were straight up using the N-word.
That's Kathenus Gill and Raymond Foreman. They unload and drive chemicals around at Univar near Plano Road and LBJ Freeway. It is dangerous work, not as worrisome as threats they say they face from coworkers.
Now they're wearing button downs and khakis. And they might even ask you how you doing, how your family doing, but you're not getting a promotion. You're not going to get treated equal. And if you sound out, you're in trouble.
The pair filed this federal lawsuit against their employer last month, detailing racial harassment, the N-word scratched on bathroom stalls, and a monkey hanging from the ceiling in the shipping department.
Nobody got in trouble for that. Nobody got in trouble for the hanging of the monkey. Nobody got in trouble for the graffiti. You report this stuff time and time again to management, and they do nothing about it. Absolutely nothing.
Univar told us we value the diversity of our employees and strive to provide an inclusive environment. As a policy, it said, we do not discuss matters of pending litigation.
It's not 100 years ago, this is 2017, this kind of thing is still happening in Dallas and it needs to stop.
And that's why Kathenus and Raymond hope a court might help. Right now, attorneys for Univar have yet to file any type of response to these allegations in court. In addition to punitive damages, though, these two men said they also want a court, if they win, to make their managers undergo diversity training and also monitor them to ensure there is no future discrimination. Reporting live, Jason Whiteley, Channel 8 News.
All right, Jason, thank you.
Black brother of hell.
Allegations tonight of racist language at Tesla. In a lawsuit filed today, three former workers, all black men, claim that co-workers and in some cases supervisors routinely call them the N-word.
Investigative reporter Liz Wagner has been following problems inside the Fremont factory all year and has details of this new development.
Owen Diaz couldn't wait to work for Tesla. A staffing agency got him a job as an elevator operator inside the Fremont factory in June of 2015. He says almost immediately his co-workers began to harass him.
They started calling me and telling me to go back to Africa, which I found kind of funny because I was born in Pasadena.
Diaz also says he found drawings like this one placed around the facility depicting derogatory images of African Americans. He says he tried to ignore it, but what happened to his son nearly broke him. Dimitri Diaz, just 19 at the time, worked on the production line.
I was turning the corner. I was coming out here to get my son his lunch. And his supervisor started calling him an effing nigger.
And you saw this?
I saw this and heard this.
How did you even deal with that?
It's my son. It's my son.
Every time it happened, I'm letting someone know.
Both men say they complained to their staffing agencies and supervisors. Owen sent this email to his boss saying he didn't feel safe around a coworker he says harassed him. But they say nothing changed until Dimitrik was let go a few months after he started and Owen quit.
You walked away?
Yes.
You couldn't take it anymore?
Couldn't take it anymore, ma'am.
A third complainant is also named in the suit against Tesla and the staffing agencies. And these aren't the first workers to make allegations of harassment and retaliation.
It made me feel less than a man.
Earlier this year, this man came forward after employees made a threatening video.
We take your home, shut you up in pieces.
Tesla's managing counsel told us the company started an investigation, but failed to see it through until months later when Tesla finally took action against the men in the video. This time around, the company declined an interview request, but says it takes every form of discrimination and harassment extremely seriously. Tesla says in this case, it's found no evidence the men made complaints about racist language and says none of the workers ever brought a claim until now. The company is questioning why the men didn't first make discrimination allegations to regulators and claims the attorney handling the case is preparing a negative media campaign against Tesla.
This conduct is illegal.
Attorney Larry Organ is representing the workers.
I think that there's a failure to educate the workers at the Tesla plant about what conduct is acceptable and what conduct is not acceptable.
Owen Diaz says he hopes his voice will force a culture change at Tesla.
To help them, you know, be able to go to work and be able to go home happy.
Liz Wagner, NBC Bay Area News.
Black brother. Black brother of hell.
Going back to what Mary said earlier on about the chap in America that decided to go and shoot and kill a load of people, 500 people. The same discussion happening here as I've heard happening there. Are white men, can you call white men who go around killing people, can they be called terrorists? You know, that same stupid discussion that white people are having. Just on that note, the school that I currently work in, some little white girl, they were having this discussion in class. And one little girl decided to speak quite audibly in my hearing because I was acting as if I wasn't listening. And she was relaying this debate in class. What she basically said was, isn't it unfair that how white men, just because they're white, can't be called terrorists? Right? So they're having this discussion in class in my earshot. And they're doing it. She's having it because she wants me to hear. Right. So that was quite funny, you know. So you've got a lot of right on white people who are going around, you know, you might call them liberals, going around saying how it's unfair, how it's unfair. So I just wanted just to put that in as well.
What a riot. What was your assessment of why they were doing this in your earshot?
Earshot. Yeah, it was just probably to get me involved in their conversation, which is not going to happen. I think that was the main reason. You know, they want to see what you think as a black person about this. Do you know what I mean? But I'm never going to get involved in their nonsense. You know, because obviously then, because you don't know where these people are going to take it. Do you know what I mean? You know, but it's good to hear them talking about it and see exactly what's on their minds. Do you know what I mean? You know, but there's a lot of that going around. You know, there's this whole liberal debate backwards and forwards, you know, and then you got a load of people coming up saying, well, that wasn't technically, you know, coming up with the Oxford Dictionary, a definition of what terrorism is, that it's got to be somebody who has a political point of view, and then there's, and that's what makes it a terrorist offence as opposed to just some white man who's not happy with life. Do you know what I mean? And that's basically what, so, you know, and you see, but the problem with that in itself is that white people are allowed to tell us what terrorism is and what it means. Do you get what I mean? So it's the definition. I'm not interested in white definitions about anything, you know? So the idea, you know, is just to basically just redesignate everything according to ourselves. You know what I mean? You know, that's all I'm interested in, you know. So there you go.
Workplace racism is Thursdays, 8 p.m. Eastern, 5 p.m. Pacific. I think we have heard that before. Whites on the job saying things in earshot of a black person that they want you to hear and or respond to, almost as though they're studying or carrying out experiments to see how you respond, and sometimes just to extract more information from you. Workplace racism.
Yeah.
Thursday.
They do that. I've had that experience. I'm sorry to cut you, Gus. I've had that experience at work where this guy visibly was upset with the fact that I wasn't speaking about myself. I'm very private anyway, and it's none of your business. And I understand that you're just trying to pick my brain because you want to know what I feel as a black person because I'm markedly different from you. And the way he became upset, I actually laughed in his face. It was a beautiful thing to see, you know, him become visibly disheveled and upset because I choose not to speak about myself. So he would say things like, oh, can I ask you a question? And I say, you can ask me anything you want. Doesn't mean I'm going to answer it. And it burns them because they have to get into your skin. It's like wearing your skin. And the best way to diffuse it, I found in my experience, is just not to answer it. Just I'm not your pet Negro or your experiment so that you can try and finesse your supremacist ways. You stay there, I'm fine. I come here to work and not make friends with you. That's how I deal with it.
Context of white supremacy. Gus T. Renegade in for another broadcast, hopefully to share constructive information on the system of white supremacy. Today's date, Thursday, October 19th, 2017, So I Have Been Told. This is our weekly forum, Workplace Racism, figuring out strategies to neutralize what whites are doing to us worldwide on the job. If you have figured out strategies, if we have any folks, if you are a black entrepreneur, or even if you work directly for, with racist man, racist woman, and you figured out some strategies to neutralize their attacks on you so that you get all your promotions, you get all your raises. If you need a transfer or to relocate someplace in the company, you get it. No problem. You get excellent reviews. You're not harassed. They're not charging you with stealing paper clips, showing up late, being quiet, not a team player. You don't get any of those accusations. You should be one of the first people to call in with tips, suggestions, recommendations on things other black people, victims of white supremacy, can do to replicate your workplace success. The number to dial, 641-715-3640. The code, 564-943-pound. Press star 6 if you would like to participate. Number again, 641-715-3640. The code, 564-943-pound. Press star 6 if you would like to participate. Actually, press star 6-1. You press star 6, it'll ask for you to press 1 to raise your hand. So skip all that. Just press star 6-1. We will get you on the line to share your views. Just quickly, in the sound clips that you heard in that second clip where they were talking about the incident at Tesla, the auto factory, a factory in California, where they said that these black workers who were being subjected to all this racism, they had a black male there in tears saying he saw his son being racially terrorized on the job. And what could he do? Again, that's why Mr. Fuller says attempted parents, attempted father, attempted mother, that those would be the correct titles under the system of white supremacy. But they said that there was no evidence that these employees reported this abuse, this mistreatment while they were working there. That's one of those where having electronic documentation, if you make a report, you document this is the date, time that it was submitted, the person that got it, all of that, sometimes it can be best as opposed to, or if you do, in addition to a hard copy, you do an electronic notification as well. That way, bam, you already have it that I sent this out, the date, the exact time down to the second. And these are all the people that I forwarded this information to, so that that is not possible at all for somebody to say, oh, no, he, she didn't say anything about being mistreated. You want a really detailed paper trail, and I'm saying electronic paper trail, to show that, oh, no, I notified Mrs. Smith, Mr. Johnson, Mrs. Jones. I notified a whole lot of folks about being mistreated, and nothing was done. The other piece in the audio clips that we started with, we have our Global Sunday Talk on Racism. It's once a month, the third Sunday of every month. And I say on that program and many other times, racism, white supremacy is a global problem. But specifically with work, the workplace, so many times we've had black people and non-white people, period, on from all over the world. And they have had the exact same types of incidents of abuse that we talk about every Thursday. You heard Andrew and Mary, and they weren't even talking about things happening in their country, England. They were talking about stuff happening here, the Vegas shooting, because that was, you know, global news for the past month or what have you. But them talking about how white people, they will study black people. They will try to extract information from us in a myriad of different ways. And they talked about specifically how white people, sometimes one of those tactics will be to say things in your earshot. They're not talking to you, but they'll just say it so they can hear. Oh, that no good O.J. Simpson. Did you hear he got out of jail? Thieving rapist. They'll say something in your earshot just to see if you will hop in the conversation, or since they've been talking around you and not included you, sometimes they'll pivot and then turn to you. Say, what do you think about that, OJ? To try to bring you into the constantly studying their subjects. And I think you heard great tips. I think Mary, even she gave some great ones as well. You can just laugh and chuckle because she noticed all the way across the pond. She noticed white people would get uncomfortable when she wouldn't take the bait, when they would do that sort of thing. And she wouldn't just start chop, 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 yabbing away, giving her opinion on things that, whoa, we wanted her to, why aren't you talking more? We're part of the family. Can I ask you a few questions? Then they might go that more direct route. And she said, you can just laugh it off, ask whatever you want to, you know, might be something I can talk about, might not. And I would be looking constantly to get back to the job. I've said with those, sometimes you can redirect. If they ask a question, you can answer it succinctly, say as much or as little as you want. You can either ask them the same question back, or got a lot of work to do, don't have a lot of time for idle chit chat. So if you got other work related things, let me know if it's something I can help you with. If not, gonna have to get back to work, Bob. Great way, but be mindful. I thought that was great because that just came up a couple days ago on workplace racism. Remind folks also, if you're not able to call in to share your thoughts, you can email untiljustice@gmail.com. untiljustice@gmail.com. If you want to share your thoughts, if you have your own experience, or if you have commentary on anything that we discuss here this evening, you can drop an email and we'll read it on the air. You can remain anonymous if you have concerns about being identified. You can share that way. We have folks who already wrote in. I'll share their comments as we proceed for the evening. I also had a report that was written on Forbes.com. They have a lot of reports that are about workplace racism. Sometimes they are constructive. Sometimes they are not. They had an article that was about how confidence can be eroded in the workplace. I thought that was especially applicable to black workers. I'll share that also, but feel free to drop an email. Remind folks also, this is not a broadcast for spectators. You have a lot of entertainment options, right? You got baseball playoffs, football. I think the basketball season started back up. You have got TGI Thursday, right? Scandal, all kinds of viewing options for Thursday evening. This is not what you do for entertainment, to dial in and hear how black people are suffering on the job or have figured out great counter-racist codification, you know, to protect themselves. This is a program for folks trying to work out strategies and to share, to study and get better with regards to labor, our counter-racist practices in that area of people activity. So dial in. It's always great if we get updates. Somebody even emailed us an update. If you call in and you share a situation that you're going through, even if you reject whatever suggestions or thoughts that we have, about your incident, just let us know. You know, this is how I chose to approach the situation, and this is what happened, because we are all trying to still learn and figure out strategies that work. Lord knows, all of us, Gusty, need more strategies, more techniques to figure out how to be successful with regards to labor. So please share, update, let us know how things evolve. Just helps us refine our codification as we proceed. In that vein, some of the folks who dialed in previously, we had a caller. She wrote in a week ago. I think I shared one of her commentaries. Was one of the first that I shared. She was working at a law firm, and the law firm had actually made this person ill, where they were having some health difficulties because of the stress and strain of the work environment. The person had talked about wanting to hold them accountable. I think we had, you know, said we didn't really know what that meant because they were not doing the correct thing. And it seemed that they were specifically withholding correct information from Black people who worked at this law firm. That was one of the problems that we addressed. And I think we talked about, as opposed to trying to, quote unquote, hold them accountable, to working on an exit strategy, particularly if this place was really impacting this person's health. So continuing, they wrote in with an update. To clarify, everyone in my office is white except for myself, the receptionist, and the temp position female. I was called into a meeting with the hiring manager from New York today. She expressed her concerns over lack of communication within the entire office and tension building up. She mentioned the receptionist stated, "We feel the tension," pointing to her skin, "and that has a grandmother who is white," and that she has a grandmother who is white. Cowbell. In turn, the pretend manager with red hair blurted out, "So I have Black people in my family," end quotes. I did not respond to her relaying the comments of biracial lineage. I was not about to get caught in a conversation about race at work. However, I confirmed the office is suffering from miscommunication, and I have been forced to hear the pretend office manager speak negatively in open space about certain employees' competence. I also stated that I was never provided with enough basic information related to the firm, its protocols, and my job duties to fully and thoroughly complete my tasks without question. And when I attempt to get the information, I am provided with vague responses or a bunch of I don't knows. The New York manager seemed to be surprised that our office was in such an uproar and slightly disappointed. She stated she has already talked with the pretend manager about her lack of communication and professionalism and will sit down with the pretend manager and IT and the IT man to reiterate her concerns. However, her only solution as of today was to delegate an attorney to hold weekly meetings for the office to go over weekly agendas. For me, this is not the proper solution. We still have the IT man controlling the doors, petty cash, check requests, catering orders, the pretend manager who lacks working knowledge of everything work-related, and we have no formal written protocol to use as a reference when something happens to go wrong at work. Also, the only feedback I received was I appear to not want to engage in conversations with people. I responded with a smile, considering I've been severely sick most of the year and the way the office suffers miscommunication, I just focus on my work as best I can. Update from last week. And also, I think the situation, if folks recall, the IT manager, this is some lower level white person or security person, I'm sorry, who was blocking, I think, like door access and, you know, just other little small things to be niggling and racist to the non-white person, the victims who's writing in. With this, I think specifically when these type of situations happen, I think one of the other strategies that white people use to practice racism, when a non-white person is being mistreated on the job, it can be these type of specific problems, right? Like they are intentionally withholding constructive information from you, right? They're having that, the door problem, whatever we're labeling as miscommunication, which is just these white people deliberately practicing racism. They'll have these meetings where they might even acknowledge that these things are happening, but they do not solve the problem. And that's something that happens, in my view. It's another way that they practice racism. They just don't solve the problem. They'll acknowledge, oh, yes, it's happening, and we're going to do this. We'll have the meeting, as the person outlined. But it seems that this is still not solving the problem. I would say be really proactive about that. Anytime that they, you know, offer up, these are the specific problems. I think Mr. Fuller suggests just having a bullet point so you don't overwrite what the situation is. You can just get right to the point with as few words as possible efficiently. These are the three problems. A, boom. B, boom. C, boom. So how is this going to solve problem A? We're having this meeting. How is this going to take care of problem A? If it's a problem with we don't have all the protocols or rules or there wasn't sufficient training, how is this meeting going to solve that problem? Be really proactive about that. And even if you need a moment to think about it, like if they give you, let's say they have it written up. You know, this is what we're going to do. This is our agenda to solve the problems that have been outlined. Okay. Take a moment and read it over. And even if you say, sir, ma'am, is it possible that I can take this home, read this over, and come back and let you know just to make sure that this will solve the problem? Because we got a lot of people here. They invested a lot of hours. We want to be efficient and not waste company time so we can get back to work. Let's make sure that this will permanently resolve the issue and we won't have to talk about this anymore. Right on. Next up, person speaking of global, and if you have thoughts, contributions on that one, feel free. Next up, person wrote in, this listener wrote in from Canada. They were having problems last week dialing in. They were listening live. When you dial in, the number 641-715-3640, the code 564-943-pound. Press *61 if you would like to participate. They were listening last week from Canada and just weren't able to get a hand up to participate, but they wrote in. They wanted to share this with listeners. I listened to the program on a regular basis last 4 months. Program is helpful. I was able to listen partially to the program, but was unable to be heard. I had some tips I wanted to share. I apologize if this sounds like repetition. Here goes. Number one, in addition to reading policy and procedures of the employer, check your personnel file periodically, ideally every 6 months. If asked why, your response should be just to ensure all is up to date, in quotes. Nothing further. The employee is entitled to review their personnel file, and if you are receiving difficulty accessing your file, consider it a red flag. Two, if a supervisor is trying to get you to do their work, such as training underperformers on your team, be sure to email them this: dear supervisor name, I am confirming that you have requested I take on the following duties. List the duties. As much as I would like to fulfill your request, the aforementioned duties appear to be outside my scope of duties I have been hired for. I request that I be properly trained for this new role. In addition to adding a new role as part of my expected list of duties, please inform me if my pay will be adjusted to reflect the additional role. Cooperatively yours, and a team player, your name. This email has helped me avoid getting additional workloads. If the supervisor is still pushy, continue to emphasize that you need training as an attempt to take on tasks not within your scope of duties would lead to insubordination. Document everything. Love hearing that. Three, the supervisor may then complain via email that you are writing too many emails as a means to derail you from documenting, especially if pertaining to a number of pertinent matters. One of the ways to respond that worked for me was, supervisor's name, I apologize in advance that the emails appear overwhelming for you. Using email helps me to keep track of the matters that were resolved and the ones not resolved. That sounds so familiar. Then restate outstanding queries requiring response. One of our listeners in Canada, racism, white supremacy,
global problem. Great suggestions, I thought. And hopefully we figured out any of the tech problems. So if she is listening in live, she can dial in, just *61, dial in. You can share yourself, give us an update if you have it. With that, I'll stop there. I still have the Forbes report to share. If folks, I guess, have any suggestions for the update, the person working in the law firm where they had this meeting with the, I guess, white person who had the power to solve some of these problems. And they just came up that they were going to have new weekly meetings with the IT person and the, I guess, interim boss in New York. I think person title she uses pretend boss. If folks have any suggestions for this person, I would still say I hope that they're working on their exit strategy to get out of there. They reiterated that that place working there has really compromised their health in being there for the year. So I would hope they're working on getting out of there pronto. But if we have any suggestions for her, we can start there. And then folks have any personal items you would like to share, feel free. Folks who dialed in with a hand up, line should be open. Proceed.
Can I be heard?
Yes, sir.
This is Curtis calling out of Las Vegas. I don't have any reports. I just have a general question for this week.
Yes, sir.
How do you deal with co-workers?
Muted.
And, or
unmuted.
White. Who request that you smile on the job. But, like, for example, today I had an incident with a customer who I was dealing with, and midway through, she just says, smile. And I didn't know how to respond to that. Because, you know, I'm in a good mood or whatever, but how do you deal with white people who request that you smile on the job?
That is interesting. I feel like I've heard that before, but not often enough to have a ready code in terms of what to say to that. Although I do feel like I've heard that before. You don't smile enough. You don't seem like you smile. You don't seem like you're having, you don't seem like you're having fun, or there seems like there's something wrong with you. I don't know. It would depend. I think for some jobs that could end up being a serious problem. I think on some jobs, if you have a job where you're supposed to be, could be sales, I might even say might be one of them. If they have a perception that if you're in sales and you don't do a lot of smiling as a black person, they, you know, could say that that's grounds for you getting written up, or how they kind of ding you on your reviews and what have you, and saying that your customer service needs work. You're not as warm. That'll be some of the coded language that they'll use. You're not as warm in how you treat customers. If that's just not your personality, I think Raza said, saying that from the very beginning and just saying, oh, I'm in a pleasant mood. You speak to everybody. I just don't do a whole lot of smiling. You can even have a ready-made joke if you know that's your personality. Right. And you know, that's a charge. You can have a ready made response where it'll come off like a joke. I don't smile too much because they think I'm making too much money. And that might get a laugh and you just move on from the situation and keep your code. But if you already know, hey, I'm not a smile person, I'm not going to be doing a whole lot of that grinning on the job, and this is an environment where they might want more smiles and giggles and that sort of thing, I would try and codify a response that I could say. It diffuses the situation and we just proceed forward. Do we have any listeners who have dealt with that? Because I feel like that's something I've heard. Any suggestions for the I guess, complaint or gripe that you don't smile enough and how you would deal with that, particularly in a sales environment? I think that's important. Suggestions. I do see folks' suggestions. Folks have any thoughts on how you would deal with if you're accused of not smiling enough, especially in the context of a sales job, how you would deal with that, codify that? Anybody even face that allegation that you don't smile enough on the job?
Yes, may I give a thought?
For sure.
Yes, this will mean in Kansas City. I have been charged with that previously. And sales is exactly the field where they would say white people would generally try to say that that is necessary. I think that the comment that was made, I just want to second the suggestion that was given. A joke is the easiest way to diffuse that one. There is no way that I have found in my experience other than a joke to safely diffuse that, including questioning questions such as, does how I look make you feel uncomfortable? For me, I can't speak for other victims, but trying questions that try to put it back on the person asking, specifically if they're white, have not been successful. Using a joke or a kind of an ice-breaking type of statement is generally what I have found to be successful, including very successful sales trainers have used that, have recommended using that. So I would second that finding a ready-made or having a just joke ready to go, because I find that to be a problem as well. Black male, I sometimes just don't like to smile. People take that as being angry or upset, but that joke really helps me to move forward, specifically about making money. Or if you just want to throw a curveball, and I don't have a problem being deceptive with white people, I'll tell them, you know, a family member died. I mean, I literally will do anything to get it off of me smiling, if it up to and including deception. I don't have a problem doing that with them. So that might be of assistance to them.
Appreciate that. If anybody else, if you have been accused of that on a job, let us know how you have dealt with it, or if anybody else has thoughts, suggestions on how you would deal with that accusation. It feels like that's one that should be more popular. I feel like we probably have more listeners who have faced that charge, but we have other suggestions. Feel free. Any other suggestions on this one? Stacy in the UK joining in early. Let's get our time stamp down. So it's 1:38 a.m. Friday morning.
Yes, that's I haven't. Hello to you and the rest of the callers. I haven't faced that one myself, but I do recall that there was a previous program where that was discussed, and I know Mr. Fox has uploaded it to the YouTube channel, and it's entitled Racist Woman at Work or something like that. So there was a caller, the male caller, who was actually being accused of the exact same thing. I don't remember what job he was in or what field he was working in, but definitely that he was being accused of it. So maybe the caller after this program may just want to go back and listen to that particular broadcast as well. So it's Racist Woman at Work. I'm not sure it was necessarily a solution to that particular issue, but it was certainly discussed. I think it all boils down to the same thing, particularly if you're changing your behaviour and becoming more codified, which I think was what was this situation that he was encountering. They obviously noticed that change in his behaviour and was picking up on that. So, you know, it's either you're not smiling enough or you're not a team player, etc., etc. It all boils down to the same thing in the end. And I guess it's just a way of you balancing and maybe, you know, allocating time to engage with your colleagues, that it doesn't allow for them to pry into your personal business or anything like that, but doesn't allow the accusations which have been made to impact on your work performance. So, you know, like you've always said, say good morning, say good night. You can keep conversations focused on work, but just show that you're actually interacting with everyone at work. And I think the suggestion about cracking a joke to get out of the situation is quite a good one as well. But I'll mute my line there, guys.
Stacey in England, great suggestions. I remember that program. We did that broadcast, White Women in the Workplace. We did that broadcast in 2011. That was like 6 years ago. There was no workplace racism program at that time when we did that program, but still recognize the significance of the danger that white women represent on the job, white people in total, but white women specifically. But yeah, I'll see if I can even go back as we're on the air. I'll post it on the Facebook page. I'll tweet it as well if I can locate it before we go off the air. Because like I said, I feel like that I've heard that before. We've talked about it before. It seems like that is a relatively common accusation against a black person in a workplace environment, and sometimes even beyond workplace, that you know you're not smiling. Something that goes all the way back to plantation days. Something wrong with you. You're picking that cotton, and we can't see your teeth. Looks like you're not having fun out here. Might need a few lashes. Any other suggestions from the folks who dialed in? Suggestions on how you deal with being accused of not smiling enough on the job? Right on. I'll check in with folks down the road to see if any of the folks that have dialed in later, if they have any thoughts on that one. And I will share that report if I can track it down from when we talked about that in 2011, the link from the video from Mr. Fox's YouTube channel. Other folks who dialed in, if you had your own situation you wanted to comment on, line should be open. Proceed.
Yes, may I proceed?
Yes, sir.
Yes, I would like to share my experience this past week, and apologize for the background. And I was doing some work at a property. This property seems to be a consistent source of racism. The new space that my tempted spouse is moving into next to her yoga studio. Been doing work there. I've been contracted by the owner to do work there. And I believe yesterday was a date that was scheduled for payment, that I was scheduled for a payment, a completion date, kind of a deadline that I was had reached. So the owner had scheduled to meet me at the property yesterday evening. I'm sorry. I apologize for the background. I'm gonna have to call back in my child. I have to attend. I apologize.
Parenting is important. No apologies. We'll catch you when things have stabilized a bit. While he's taking care of that, any of the other folks who dialed in with a hand up, you had commentary, your own situation you wanted to discuss, and I'm still going to hold out because I suspect we do have some other folks who've been accused of not smiling. Folks have comments on that. We'll nab those as we go. Other folks with a hand up, proceed.
Hello, can I be heard?
Yes, ma'am.
Hi, I'm technically speaking, and I'm calling because I experienced racism and white supremacy on the job and found a couple of things that have helped. A little bit, not completely, you know, getting me from under this, but I have found it helpful. So I work in the technology field, and I was faced with a situation where I was on a team where there were several racist white supremacists, and they were doing things to undermine my authority because I was appointed as a lead on a team. And I noticed that every time that I am appointed a lead on a team, I really get a lot of, you know, everything is fine with these people, or as fine as it can be in a situation where they're suspected racist. But then when I become a lead on the team, they really start to lash out. So, in this scenario, I found that it was hard for me to make it clear what was being done to me. So eventually, one of the most racist ones, or the most outwardly racist ones on the team, asked to speak to me in private. And as soon as he asked me that, I was so happy because I knew that that was where he was going to really try to dominate me when he got me in this meeting to speak with me in private. So I made sure that I was calm and that I recorded the conversation. And this was very helpful for me because there were people who wanted to understand what I was dealing with and who, you know, they knew this person and they knew his track record to a degree, but I was new on the team. And so they were not sure, you know, how to really defend me. But after that, I recorded that conversation and I shared it with some other senior people on the team who were on a different segment of the team than I was. Then they were able to witness exactly what I was dealing with this person and share that. I had two witnesses from that point that were able to go to the manager of the entire team and let them know that, yes, what I was saying was real and that, you know, it was a hostile work environment for me and these types of things. So it pushed the hand of the manager of the whole department, who was really trying to get, he was a racist white supremacist as well. He was really trying to get out of really hearing the issue that I was facing. So he was pushed to act. And what happened is I was just transferred to another project. Now, this was a temporary solution for me. It was a positive solution because I was able to get out of such a very intense racist scenario. When I came to the new team, it was positive. The people who defended me were on that team, and it was fine. Except I knew that the racist manager eventually would find a way to, like, pretty much weed me out. But it gave me more time. Now, the other two things that helped me is because, as I said, I'm in technology. And so in my field, there's a very, very high demand. So I'm never concerned about having an opportunity I can switch positions and roles and projects very easily. And many times I end up making more money. And then the other thing that helps me is to I stay ahead of those that are in my field. So when new technologies are coming out, I'm the first one to learn them. And when I do that, it makes me so valuable to the point where I'm often given so many opportunities that I can choose my schedule. I can work from home a lot, which cuts down a lot of this office dealing with people face to face and all of that kind of thing that happens. And then I'm usually on teams where there's just the need is so great, I don't face as much of those types of problems. So that's all I wanted to share.
That is spectacular. You should have been the first person to dial in. We need more of that. People who figured out some great strategies that are proving effective, and particularly highlight. I had two questions, but I just wanted to highlight two aspects. First, you said sometimes with regards to counter-racism, Mr. Fuller stated, white people can fire you anytime they want to. There's nothing you can do about that as long as white supremacy exists. Sometimes the goal with counter-racism is more time to think and plan what you want to do next. If you can get more time and at least minimize some of the problems that you're having, sometimes that will work great, just to give you more time and the ability to think, strategize. Also, being competent, being aggressively competent, so that you are valued in your skills, your expertise shows on the job. That is always will serve you well as a black person, even on a personal level. But I did have two questions. You said when this race soldier, he cornered you privately, and you said you knew this was going to be an increase in direct racial abuse. You said you were happy. Why?
I was happy because I knew that he was going to give me an opportunity to record his racist activity. and thanks to shows like this one, I'm more or less confused about racism. So I knew that he was going to try to really dominate me when he got me behind closed doors. I just knew it. And so, you know, at the time before he asked me for this private meeting, or he was just like, you know, can we just go chat? I mean, he came off really nice. And that's why a lot of people on the team, even though they might have suspected, even people who kind of wanted to believe me, they just really had no proof, because he always came off as like, oh, yeah, I'm the friendly guy on the team. And so when we went into the meeting area, I just knew he was going to do it. And he was just, he really did not let me down. So as soon as these other senior people on the team heard the recording, within the first 3 to 5 minutes, they were like, this is ridiculous. This is ridiculous. And they couldn't help but speak out. And they were Black men or non-white men. And I feel that they were so upset and angered by the way that this person, you know, dealt with me, that they just felt like they could not stay silent about it.
My other question I wanted to get in, I guess, do you know what the laws are about recording in your state? And did you have concerns about sharing this recording with other coworkers, that one of them might rat you out and be like, you know, technically speaking, is, you know, going around here being a mole, you know, we need to do so. Did you have any concerns that could have happened?
Well, a couple of things. Initially, I did not know that there were any laws regarding recording that I should be concerned with. However, when I did mention to one of the guys who was kind of like a senior, because they were a senior employee, they were like a mentor and a counsel to me previously, and we had positive interactions, and I kind of knew a little bit about their stance on things, so I did not think that they would rat me out. But at the same time, they did mention that, you know, this could be, you know, a problem, you want to check on that. So I did check on the laws, and in my state, the law was that if you are in a conversation, you can record it if you are one of the people that are in the conversation. So that is an important point. And then the other thing is that as far as feeling like I might be ratted out, because I work in the technology field, and knowledge, like global knowledge, is the currency in IT, information technology. So the knowledge is of such importance that they know that they need people from around the globe to help them solve their problems. And this was a major corporation that I was working at. So I know they had a diversity department. The person that was the like maybe you would call like a VP type person over this was a white female, which you really don't see in technology. There's a very few females. So my plan was that if with this recording and with the other information that I had, emails and things like that, because that was another thing that helped, is documenting. Making sure that everything that was being asked of me or things that I was turning in and things were being acknowledged via email. And so along with the recording and the emails, I plan to take that to, you know, people at higher levels. And even if they didn't want to respect what happened, it would shine a light on the situation to the point that it would make all of those people involved very uncomfortable. And that's one of the reasons why the racist moved me to another team, as opposed to ending my contract right there, because I was a contractor. But I wasn't concerned with any of that as well, because I'm in a career that is in very high demand. So even before he ended up cutting my contract, but I started a new job that paid more and that was 100% remote, before he even told me that they was going to cut my contract. And when he told me, I couldn't even finish out the 2 weeks that he gave me that before my contract ended, because I was already on to a new role.
Wow. Definitely the law, whatever the law is in your particular part of the world, I think that's helpful. I think some of our listeners have said, even if I think they call that one party, single party consent, where if you are a part of the conversation, you don't need to get consent from anyone else. You can record, where in some cases you have to get consent from everyone that's involved. Where even in those instances, if you still want to record just for your own personal use, but regardless, I would generally have tremendous apprehension about sharing a recording, even in an area where it's legal, with other employees, even other non-white employees, just because the same reason that I've said before about, you know, talking, I would not be comfortable telling everyone that I work with that I have a recording of some of the racist conduct of people that I worked with. So I wouldn't tell them that I had a recording, but you said you knew some of these folks and, you know, you already had a rapport with them at some level, but definitely something to consider. Did anyone have any questions? We have someone who seems like they have worked out some sterling counter-racist codification in the tech industry. Any questions for Technically Speaking? No questions.
Hi, Garth.
Stacey, yes, ma'am.
Not a question, but a comment about the fact that these acts are sometimes so hard to quantify. So it's very difficult to be able to present a case to anyone, whether it's your work colleagues or management. But I guess, like with the person who's just shared her story, one thing that these racist suspects can be trusted to do is to continue to carry out their acts of terrorism, and they become accumulative. And eventually, I think they do build up a confidence as well. So I think in my situation, where I'm going through a grievance process, like with the lady who's just spoken, very early on, it was very difficult to be able to quantify. And there are so many different acts that happen that you can almost lose. It's difficult to choose which one to present when you are formalising a process or presenting the issue to management. But they do also trip up. So I know in the situation that she recorded the individual, and they can act very nice. And, it's interesting that her co-workers, even though they were non-white, you know, didn't suspect that this person was who she was telling them he was. But I guess my point is generally they do become overly confident and more aggressive in their acts. Sometimes I don't mean necessarily physically aggressive, but, just pursuing their mission to undermine or push you off a particular project. And so those acts become more quantifiable in the long run. And, it's easier for you to build up a picture. But I'd agree that, sometimes these situations are really hard to be able to quantify and present to management. But just to keep track of all of the things that take place, as we've discussed in the past. I'll meet my long guys.
Document, very important, very, very important. And I think also that's, in my view, that is one of the goals of counter-racism, is that you can relax. You will expect, oh yeah, the racism is coming. That's what this is all about. For him to end. In fact, I am prepared for this. Got my recorder,
bang, practiced, already set up for how I'm going to get this done. Like, just that's what the goal of counter-racism is, so that these things don't happen and catch us by surprise when we're angry or we become emotional in how we respond to these sort of things. No, I expected this. This is exactly what I've been training for, studying for, and these are the codified responses that I already had planned to carry out. And again, document, very important document. In my view, another illustration of why it is important. What does it mean to be white? There is no such thing as a good white person. To be white, that classification means racist, white supremacist, even the nice, smiling, friendly ones. Yes, they are racist man, racist woman, racist child. That, I think, can be very helpful in those type of environments where you have a really nice, quote unquote, white person or three in the workplace where all of the non-white people adore this person or at least aren't suspicious and they're nice to you. Doesn't seem that they've done anything. Even them, you should always be suspicious, maybe even extra suspicious if it's a nice white person. Mm-hmm. Anybody else have questions they wanted to get in for technically speaking? I'll assume folks are grand. Do we have other folks who had questioned their own situation that they wanted to get in?
Can I be heard?
Yes, sir.
Yes, thank you very much, sir. Greetings to the guest, the host, the listeners and callers. I wanted to kind of give an update on the non-white female who was terminated about 2 weeks ago. What's interesting is that the people, like some people still didn't even know this person was gone. Like different parts of the building or whatever. And, they were saying like, wow, you know, she was a hard worker and things like that. And to be honest, like it was one time where like I was upstairs and another person asked me about this person. And, she says, man, you know, I didn't know she got fired. You know, she was always sweet to me and stuff. So I walked outside and I got teary eyed, but like not, you know, to the point of where I was visibly crying, but, you know, like it kind of, you know, that kind of hit me right there. Because I know how the system is conditioned us. And, you know, it really was a firsthand, direct demonstration of that, how we are conditioned to treat white people in a high regard and mistreat non-white people, black. So like that was one of the few times that I got teary-eyed on the job. And the next, well, actually there's other parts to this. There was another non-white female that I was talking to this person about. She said a black female went to sit down with the person, the code name Warden. She sat down with her and she used this metaphor. Because she was saying, hey, you know, we're not being treated, and I know she used the F word, we're not being treated fairly. So I just let her talk or whatever. So the warden says, oh, you know, I'm sorry about what's going on around here. And she says, my hands are tied. My hands are tied when it comes to, you know, the girl. So I have no idea what that meant. So that was her response to that. And they were saying that a meeting at the other building that they were going to change the policy. All right. So they just terminated this female. That I think that could be the catalyst as to why they plan to alter the, you know, rules or policies or whatever. And the next one was, there was another analogy that was made by the white woman when she was talking about coming to pick up like records or whatever. And like the analogy was that, like, because when people come pick up their records, sometimes it might not be the person who is the whose name is on the record. It could be someone's relative or spouse or whatever coming to pick it up. So she said, you know, in the example, and I've been writing these down too, and you know, she said in the example this time, that, you know, say that I'm coming to pick up, you know, a record, and the record got my name on it. And then she said it like at least like two more times, but she wasn't talking to me. She was talking to some, like, a third party. And, you know, she said it like two more times. And it was accurate, spot on, the same way, the same placement. I am the person who is the criminal, all right, the record holder for committing the crime. And she was the one coming to pick up the record, you know, just to make an example of, you know, whoever come to pick up records aren't always the person who name is on the record. And the third one is that there has been a lot of discussion about racism. I mean, like, it's almost like I couldn't even avoid it. You know, it's been going on all this week. Like, they had some Nazis or whatever, you know, start to march downtown, and everybody was looking out the windows. So, like, this ain't never really happened to me before, like, you know, and I had been studying this issue, you know, race or whatever. And, you know, like, the way I heard people talking about it, it was just, like, you know, very inaccurate. But, you know, it's understandably so coming from non-white people. And, you know, it's a bunch of people looking out this window, and this, they were doing this march outside, you know, in front of the building to march down the street. So, like, you know, everybody looking out the window, and this, I could just see the confusion, you know, the shock and the surprise. Like, man, like, how they let, you know, these swastika wearing people march like right out front. And then also they had police protecting them and whatnot. Like, it's a large amount of law enforcement vehicles like all over the place. So it's a real intense situation in that regard. And one girl I heard say about, like, I guess this Richard Spencer debacle about, like, you know, who would be classified as white, because she said that she is part Cherokee or something like that. So, you know, like, she was talking to the judge upstairs about it. So, you know, a lot of interesting dialogue going on about race, and I think it's going to continue tomorrow and days to come. So that's all of my report right now. Thanks.
That's right. You're down there where my man Richard Spencer, I thought they declared it a state of emergency around those parts. They had to get all the security and what have you. I'm sure that's daily, and particularly in some sort of court setting. That's got to be daily conversation. Like, man, state of emergencies declared and Nazis marching in the streets. Richard Spencer is coming to talk to the children. My goodness. I cracked up laughing with those metaphors. I've said for years to pay attention where she used you as the criminal. Now, did that happen before where you got used in some sort of analogy or metaphor on the job where you also were like the criminal, the maldoer in the example? Did that happen previously? Oh, your audio faded out a little bit.
Can you hear me?
Yes, sir.
Yes, like when people do a sworn complaint, usually that's someone filing a report against someone else, I guess, doing something to them.
Mm.
And she went into an analogy talking about domestic violence, okay? And usually it is the male that is the, I guess, the aggressor physically. So she used me in that example, you know, talking to another person. I'm thinking this was a customer. Yeah, it was a customer. And she said that, you know, it's like me and blank, my name was together, and he was beating on me and not filed a report. I filed a report on him. So, yeah, that's how. And then it's been other ones. I can't remember them, but I never really, like, paid too much attention to it. But, you know, it was, like, toxic racism in that. But it happened so fast. And it just goes to show you, like you mentioned before, just being observant about, you know, statements and things that are said, and it's very slick and very sneaky.
Context of white supremacy. And in my view, particularly those types of settings where we're just, this is something hypothetical, right? Like, we're not talking about real, where we're just using an example to get paperwork done or so people understand what the process is to get their documents, records, paperwork. If that's the case, you could make up names, you know, it could be Homer Simpson, or you could use TV characters or whatever to get the, oh, no, we're going to use, yes, this nigger over here that I work with. We'll make him the rapist beater. And yes, anybody can come, even if he was trying to get his raping criminal records, he could, you know, get his cousin to come. I mean, like, what is that? Why do I consistently have to be the criminal? That's the way that they think about black people, all of us, all the time. You can see it in those types of examples, particularly if you're always the criminal. Something would be, you know, stand out about that as well. The first illustration, I think you told us last week about the black female that you worked with who was terminated, said that earlier, Mr. Fuller says nothing you can do if they decide that they want you out of there, and how they were, you know, talking about her. And they'll do that. I've seen that before in work situations where a black person will be let go, and it'll be a black person who seemed by all accounts to, you know, get along. They were friendly with folks and worked hard, and they're, oh man, I can't believe she's gone. Or, you know, their little tacky procedure as though they feel some type of way about it. But taking your time and space, if you, you know, feel like it's kind of getting to you emotionally, always make sure, I mean, we are human, and it has an impact. Seeing black people that you know ended up not having a job anymore, and knowing the type of turmoil that that can cause, particularly if you're talking about someone who's an attempted father, an attempted mother, or just, you know, whatever it happens to be in life, even if they're single, just the turmoil that that can cause in your life as a victim of racism, to be, you know, suddenly terminated, that can and should have an impact, seeing that happen to someone that you've worked with. If anything, I would say they kind of condition us often to just be callous about the whole thing, to see a black person get fired and be like, oh, they deserved it. They did something. They were messing around and that sort of thing, to just have no compassion for a black person in that position a lot as well. I've seen that happen frequently as well. Appreciate
hey,
that.
Sir.
Yes, sir. Yes, sir.
Oh, sorry about the interruption, but I wanted to, like I had, it was another metaphor that I've been thinking about when this person, because the non-white female, she told me that the other non-white female sat the, you know, the warden down, okay, and they was in the office. So she was, you know, her only response was, she said her hands was tied. Like, what do you get by that metaphor? Like, you know, a white person telling a black person her hands are tied.
I think a lot, when I said before, who was it? The female that wrote in from the law firm about them having the meeting, but she felt like they didn't address the problem. This is what they said, but this is not really addressing the problem. I think a lot of times that's one of the ways that white people practice racism. They will not solve the problem. So in this instance, it's white people giving the impression there's nothing that I can do about this. That sort of metaphor, my hands are tied. I don't have any power. There's nothing that I can do to intervene in this situation at all. I think they will use that as some sort of excuse, because a lot of times these white people could do something about that. I don't know if the particular white person that you were talking to, but it's been my experience that a lot of times even that white person going and talking to one or two white people could have a big influence on whether or not that person gets rehired or not. But that's just my opinion. I think they do a lot of that. White people try, particularly when they're talking to black people, trying to give us the impression that they're powerless, that there's nothing that they can do to solve our problem or handle any of the things that are happening, incorrect things that are happening, that there's nothing that they can do about that. Number again, 641-715-3640. The code 564-943-pound. Press star 6 if you would like to participate. Star 6-1 if you would like to participate. If you have commentary, questions for any of the folks who have dialed in thus far, feel free. If you have your own commentary you would like to share, feel free as well. And again, if we have folks who have thoughts on if you are charged, accused of not smiling, if you have a codified way of responding to that, I feel like that's one that black people get hit with often enough that we might have some folks who have a steadfast code on how to respond to that. That would be good as well. Folks that have commentary, feel free.
Gus, this is technically speaking again. I don't want to speak out of turn, but if there is a space, I do have commentary that I would share after anyone else who hasn't gone speak.
We should have time. Proceed.
Well, I have been wanting to call in for a while because I've worked in these big corporations and have gone through this whole racism, white supremacy at work thing quite a bit. And there's a couple of things, some other things that I've picked up along the way. And one thing is that, you know, when we go to work, a lot of times we're there for 8 to 10 hours. We're there, you know, 5 days a week or whatnot. So sometimes we can get, or I found myself being in a position where I can get a little too comfortable or get off focus in considering that I'm a non-white female. My focus has to be different than a lot of other people's. And so to help me stay focused, a lot of times I just think of this scenario, the corporate environment, like a plantation where there are some slaves on a plantation that are just working feverishly. They're just trying to basically avoid getting lashed. But there are some slaves on a plantation that they're always thinking about, how can I get off the plantation? Like, they know that somebody's going to make a mistake. There's going to be a loophole. There's going to be something where I can get off of this plantation. And so I find that thinking like that helps me to always look at everybody who's approaching me, suspected white supremacists, even non-white people, and think, well, what is their role here? What is their role in this system of racism, white supremacy? And it helps me to determine how I can best deal with them, you know, or at least come up with a strategy that I can think of that might help. And then also it gets me in a place where I'm observing and listening a lot to determine who is who. And sometimes the listening not only helps me determine who is who or what role they're playing in this so-called plantation scenario, but it also helped me to learn things about my field. You know, I was just listening to one non-white male on my job, and he gave me some simple insights that really helped me in my career, like quickly made a difference as far as bringing my income higher. And I found that just kind of listening to a lot of different people is better than talking. Because when you're talking, a lot of times you get too comfortable and that person has you in a position where they, if they wanted to, they can attack you in some way. And then it kind of reminds me back on what you were saying about how did you know about these coworkers that you could share this with them or, and this type of thing. And I found that when I, well, one thing that I learned that you reminded me about is I learned that not to assume that other non-white people on the job will help you or understand racism, white supremacy. Because I've kind of felt that way at one point where there's so much going on in the news and everything, you're thinking, oh, okay, another black person, they understand. They would be on my side or whatnot. But I learned just don't assume that. I mean, there's probably maybe people who are a lot more sophisticated in racism and white supremacy than me that probably go in knowing this. But I really had to check myself to tell myself, don't assume that you can trust this non-white person. And then the last thing with me that's been helpful. And I also want to say that I've had scenarios where non-white people have been very helpful and protective of me in combating racism, white supremacy. So I want to throw that out there. But as I started to learn who I can even talk to, just have normal conversations with, you know, I had to learn who those people are where I could have some measure of relaxing. But the other part, the last thing I want to say as far as staying focused, one thing I decided in my corporate life is to stay focused on the end goal, which is getting another paycheck. So the real end goal for me is to get another paycheck or a higher paycheck. So I just don't engage. And I've heard you talk about this before, Gus. Don't engage in any other activities that have nothing to do with getting that main end goal. Like no lunches, no even conversations, no anything. Because if you think of this as a plantation environment, your life is kind of on the line here. And in this scenario, life being the next paycheck, the lifeline. So it's like not a place to like start just doing random things that really are not in line with the end goal. And that's kind of helped me stay out of trouble, especially where there's racist white supremacists or white people. I don't care how nice they are. I just don't want to engage in any conversation that doesn't have anything to do with my job in some way. I'll smile in passing. I'll say hello in passing, but I just want to keep it moving. No talking, no distracting me from that main goal. And the last thing, and one more thing I want to say, and when you have that attitude, I feel like racist white supremacists feel like you're not an easy enough target. Like they are like not as quick or as comfortable to confront and kind of deal with you. Usually when I face a lot of racism, white supremacy, is because I've let that person feel like they have a rapport with me and kind of figure out some things about me to where they feel comfortable enough to attack in their racist, white supremacist terror and torture tactics. So that's all I wanted to share. Thank you. Thanks, everybody.
Outstanding. That's, like I said, that's what we need, folks, to dial in first. If you have figured out some great information to help you minimize, neutralize white supremacist aggression on the job. And definitely, I want to highlight and boldface print, not getting too comfortable on the job. That's why I've emphasized for years, no personal items, no knickknacks, pictures, and all that other ornaments in your office or desk area, whatever you have, because this is not your area. That's why I even say not using possessive adjectives. It's not my desk, my furniture, my computer. It's their plantation, and I'm here to accomplish a purpose. Keeping that in mind, I think, will help you a lot in the workplace, and definitely not assuming that just because this person has a lot of melanin and we're on the same job, that they are going to have my best interest at heart. Not something you want to assume at all. We have other folks. Other folks. Then with a hand up, they wanted to share. Line should be open. Proceed.
Gus.
Stacy in the UK. Yes, ma'am.
I've just sent you an email, and it's a link to the Channel 4 program about pay rises, because I know a couple of months ago you were asking about tips on how to get a pay rise, and I came across this earlier this week, actually, so I meant to share it. It's a Channel 4 program called Dispatches. It's only about half an hour, but it's actually focused on how to negotiate a pay rise. And so I thought it'd be useful to share with the callers. If you can post the link on your Facebook page or whatever. So there's two people, and they are being coached by a negotiator who works with government on various big projects, big issues. And it was, I found it really useful. I mean, it's not the most extensive or in-depth program, and so, you know, it'll only give you a hint of how to approach it, but some really useful tips. And some of it may be obvious, but it certainly wasn't. I've not been in that position where I've had to negotiate or prepared myself well enough to negotiate a pay rise before, so it was useful for me. And so it just talks about how you might go approaching that conversation with an employer, to think about the value that you might add and the rationale for why an employer might consider increasing your salary, and thinking about how much you want and then how to negotiate that. So, you know, the obvious one being that you start higher than the figure you actually want. But also it was just useful because they do show the two people negotiating with their employers. And, you know, it is on TV, the employers know they're being filmed. So, you know, both people ended up with a pay rise, and maybe the cameras helped, but actually, I think in particular the woman, I do think that scenario was more real, in that, you know, she really had to get into an in-depth conversation with her employer about how she could add value, and it was movement, and, you know, the negotiation process was being, you get to watch the negotiation process. So, yeah, I just thought that would be useful to share, and linking back to an earlier question you asked us a couple of months ago. I'll meet my line, guys.
Spectacular. Much obliged for sharing. I actually checked my email and posted it at the top of the hour, so it's already on my Facebook page, the Dispatches program on pay raises. Just go to facebook.com. The problem is white people. That's my page, and I put it in the Cows group as well, and I will post it on Twitter as well. But we definitely, any information like that that you think would help black people on the job, share. Other folks who dialed in, if you have a hand up, if you have commentary, line should be open. Proceed.
I'll be heard.
Yes, sir.
Yes. So I have a few I wanted to share, but I'm going to have to pick it up on the other side, on the train. But I just wanted to say, as far as the smiling, I've had jobs where I was the receptionist, so they wanted you to smile and greet the customers as they came in. However, that doesn't, in my opinion, equate to having to do it to other coworkers. So if it's something that's entailed for the job position, which it sounded like it was a customer service job and they were expecting them to smile for the customers, I think that, you know, if it's a sales position, definitely that's part of the job. But other than that, you know, you're not expected to be, I call it a cheerleader, because, you know, when you watch cheerleader practice, they would always be told whatever they're doing, they smile, you know, the coach would always say, smile, you know, and they would get in trouble for not smiling. So the cheerleader positions, I call them. But if you're in the sales position, I would imagine that would be part of the procedures to engage customers and make sales.
Don't know, he might be having the train situation interrupt his line.
I guess we did get some additional advice on if you've been accused of not smiling. I think he was saying that he would just point out he's not there to cheerlead, quote unquote. Now, if you're in the sales position, I think he was saying, like I said, that might be a little different in terms of you might be required to do that for the customers, but that should not, you know, include having to ear to ear smile for every coworker interaction that you have throughout the day. While I guess Thomas in New York will hear from him, I guess, when he dials in on the other side, perhaps. Other folks, if you dialed in, if you had a hand up, line should be open. I'll give out the number again, 641-715-3640 and the code 564-943-pound. Press *61 if you would like to participate. Other folks have commentary they wanted to share?
Can I be heard?
Yes, ma'am.
Greetings, beautiful people. When it comes to the smiling, I have a couple of different perspectives, and I guess it just depends on the situation and what would work best for your personality and what you're capable of even doing. In most, if not all of my positions, I've been hired for, in part, for that reason, to be personable and warm or whatever. Even as a pharmacy technician, that's part of the job. So, you know, I think there's a way to do it without it becoming taxing, because I do think that you can over-smile and over-exert and all of that, and it wears on you as a, as an individual. And so just finding your happy medium, like even with customers, there's a clear difference in how I used to be before I became a little bit more informed and how I am now. And I still greet and all that. My smile is like a split second. It's not this like long thing or anything like that. When it comes to how, like, say you're in like a cubicle situation, so you don't, you're not coming in contact with customers and stuff like that, at least face-to-face. I think that if you don't smile, you perhaps might attract more negative attention than you might want. So if it's being brought up, I think that's a cue that you're being watched. And so by not smiling, it's like a codification. You don't want to smile at white people. Okay, I get it. Or non-white people that you just don't want to smile at work. Like, I totally get it. But I think that, you know, what the woman said before who spoke earlier, that, you know, she sees it as a plantation. I think that that's a very accurate metaphor. And if that is the case, then it's a hostile environment. It's not friendly. I'm not so sure that the codification of not smiling is preventing you from having problems in the future, because if it's being brought up, like I said, it means that you're being watched and you don't really want to be watched. So I think greeting, that's, I'll put this out there too. I think that's one of the mistakes that I've made, is that like, I'll just come in and start doing what I need to do. And then that's off-putting to certain people. So now I have their negative attention. Now they want to send me emails and talk this, that, and the third about whatever, when just a simple, you know, hello and like a short little smile, and I can just kind of slide by. But that's not to say that they won't find some other way or reason to practice their racism. But I think that it's, for myself, it's been helpful to choose a code that is, that doesn't create another problem. So I think it just depends on what's going to work for you. For me, smiling and that whole thing, not extra and over to where it's like stressful and fake and all of that, allows me to use my energy more wisely when I'm in the presence of white people or I'm on the plantation. So smiling could also be viewed as codification, not extra. You don't have to be nobody's cheerleader, nothing like that, but just get, you know, there's like, there's a social way, you know what I mean? Like, please and thank you. It's kind of one of those things, but it's whatever's going to work for other folks. Thank you for sending Gus that video. I, of course, haven't watched it, but I will, because I accepted my pay for my new pharmacy gig always with the intention that I was going to counter that later. But to me, it was smarter to get the job, and then I will deal with the pay later. And so I'm going to watch that video and see. And so I've been over here plotting how I was going to do it. and soon too, because I'm getting paid. I've been a tech for a long time and I'm national. And like at one time I was state, but I'm also nationally certified. So with a bunch of other things going on. So what they're paying me is well below what I'm actually worth in terms of what you're getting, especially because you don't have to train me on anything, not even really the system, because I know all of this. So I'm going to watch that video and I'm going to see what I can get away from it and apply it. So thank you, Miss Stacy, over there in the UK. I told you all about the TA teacher. Well, I'm a TA for a teacher. It has like so many things are confirmed for me, but my purpose in being a TA was never for the money. It was so that I could have access to non-white students who have difficulty in math and science, but want to pursue things that require that they be strong in math and science, so that if they come to me, I'm able to give them this information and make it so that not only do they pass, but that they excel and can do well. I've been doing that, and it's evidence. I just wanted to tell y'all. So pretty much whatever this racist woman does, that's what she's going to do. She done already tried to touch. She done bumped into my behind. She done tapped me on the shoulder. She done tried to touch me. Look, whatever. My code is that I'm focused on my goal. I'm not about to get, because sometimes what white people do is they like to just push you, and they're trying to get you to react. That is their entire goal. They may not even want you to quit. They just need that emotional outburst. They need that from you. She's not about to get it from me. All she's about to get is what I consider class and professionalism. And I don't mean that as a code word for white, but I mean Black class and Black professionalism. And I'm going to still do what I was doing extra. So let me tell y'all that I have students that once they come to my office hours one time, they come to my office hours every week. And I've watched their grades improve. They failed their first quiz. They're getting A's now. So that's my focus, and that's what I'm staying on. In terms of with the new pharmacy thing, my code has been working great because I deal with, you know, white people all the time. But I hit them with the Black professionalism, Black self-respect, Black class. I make the eye contact. I get them out the way. Let's move. You can't even tell that I would even think anything about white people the way I do. And I don't get extra close. I just use, you know, with the pharmacist or the text or whatever, I just use that as an opportunity to ask questions, to get information about how as I want to move forward in my career and everything like that. And I keep it, I mean, and I'm still vetting them because I would like to have opportunities to speak further or, you know, anything like that. But we're not there yet, and we may never be. This is just a gig. And I've already given myself a time limit. I'm in and out. So whether they give me the up and pay or not, I'm still going to stay because, you know, I get my little change and keep it moving. I don't define myself by this. I won't define myself by this. And I think that that's healthy for the Black mind. And that's really what I wanted to say. So I thank you all for listening.
That is wonderful, particularly if that's a part of what you're doing in your work capacity is being able to help Black students. That is outstanding. And then able to show results. That is just spectacular. Keep up the outstanding work. I meant to say also with regards to, I wanted to make sure I appreciated the commentary about solving problems without making new problems as it relates to smiling and just looking at that as if, hey, it looks like I'm being watched. If they're saying, you're not smiling enough, or why aren't you smiling, and that sort of thing, it looks like I'm being watched. Let me see how I can solve this problem without creating a new problem, even if that means I have to work my cheek muscles a little more. I definitely appreciated that. I also wanted to make sure that I added the importance of observing and listening. I think technically speaking, touched on that, and super important aspect of counter-racism, especially on the job. Man, you should be spending about 5-10 times more time listening and observing as opposed to talking on the job, and really trying to not just looking out for racism, white supremacy, because it's going to be a lot of that anyway, but also just trying to learn more information about your environment that can be of use to you.
very important, something that we should have in regular practice, and something that I didn't do a lot of when I was more confused about racism, white supremacy. I just was not very observant about my workplace environment, but much more so now. Other folks have a commentary they wanted to share?
Yes, may I give my commentary?
For sure.
Yes, I have a brief window here. I'm holding a three-week-old, and he can go off at any moment to get attention. So, okay, yeah, I just want to pick up my experience this past week. By the way, I just wanted to say that this call has been the most positive workplace experience that I've had all week. A lot of Black self-respect, and I'm feeling good. I think I've been given a lot more tools. I want to thank the callers and the hosts. The Black female is coming through tonight, giving us some good. I was dealing with a suspected racist who's a quote unquote landlord of a property, manager of the property that is on the border of the Black and white areas of the city that I live in. I guess it's being developed, some people would call it gentrified, and I've been doing work on this property. It's my attempted spouse's property that she's expanding into. We're taking over some space on the shopping strip next door to where she currently has a yoga studio for a dance and arts, African dance and arts studio. So we have a period where we're supposed to do a payment on this particular portion of the project, and it's just like the previous caller stated, getting comfortable with not even the slightest. I've learned this, that being codified means not letting anything slide, specifically when it comes to details about your family. So the suspected racist knows my attempted spouse has just had a child and asking me about the child. So he asked about the child, and I told him, the child is doing well. The child is sleeps, whatever. We had about a 1-minute conversation, which was way too much. I should not have even given him that much time, if any. He turns around and then almost within the same breath decides that he doesn't want to pay the complete amount for the point that we're at in the project. And I tell him that this is a completion date, like this is what is owed. And I also tell him that I mistakenly put up a wall where, in our agreement, the wall was supposed to be removed. Now, granted, putting up a wall is significantly more expensive than removing a wall, but a wall was put up improving the property, which in the long run, he would have had to replace that wall anyway. It would have been one of our custom addendums, which we did not want to do at the time. So due to that misunderstanding, I did not have the documentation on hand. I later found the documentation but did not have it with me. He didn't want to make the payment. And when I said, I don't believe that's correct, he said, excuse my language, he said, it's right here in the fucking lease. I don't take well the four-letter words. I have a challenge controlling my temper. I was able to yesterday, and I said, hey, there's no need to curse. And I knew at that point, he was just wallowing in and being white, just full beast mode. No metaphor or pun intended there. I do believe that they are of that nature. But I knew that I needed the money. Okay, like I knew that he couldn't walk out of here without giving me that money. So there was a lot of things that went through my mind. I had to think very quickly because he could not leave without giving me that money. I needed that payment for the project and just for my work that I've been doing. So I decided to position myself between him and the door. And ever so slightly, I stood there and I said, hey, what do we need to do to get this resolved? And I don't know if he understood my desperation, but if he would have had a bag of money, I would have knocked him over the head with a brick. I knew that wasn't going to be constructive because I just knew we had to figure out a way to get this money out of his hands. I stood between him and the door and imposed the question, and that's when he decided, after about 2 or 3 minutes we talked, that he was going to write the check. He wrote a check, made the payment, and he left. I just quickly kind of dismissed and just left. I was happy with myself with the outcome, because the outcome was the money. The outcome was not to be friendly, but I realized that I was not codified, and that caused me some trouble. I should have never allowed him to speak about my family or of that topic ever. And unlike a company, just as a point of reminder to the other non-white listeners, when you don't work for a company, you don't have an employee handbook. So your code has to be really tight. Your code has to be the employee handbook. You have to know how you're going to react. And I'm to the point now, why not write it down and have my own and make my own company handbook? Because if you are not, just because you don't have a company handbook doesn't mean there aren't rules to follow that you need to get through to get what you need to get done, to accomplish what you need to get done, to either make some money or the career, whatever you want to do as an online person. But you have to have a code, and that has to be your book that you go by. Because if you don't, you're going to easily be thrown off. And the purpose of an employee handbook is so that the company runs correctly. And as a non-employed, as a person who is employed, quote-unquote self-employed, you want to make sure that you can just get what you can from these devils and just keep it moving. So I wanted to share that with everyone today. If anyone has any suggestions, I'd be more than happy to hear that. But yes, I also want to just, again, thank the female callers for their wonderful advice. I'll take my call offline. Thank you.
If the young child will cooperate with us for a few seconds, I just had a quick question. What you said you were not pleased in terms of you felt you weren't as codified as you would like to be, and how you dealt with the race soldier who was kind of refusing you payment at first. Ideally, how would you have dealt with that situation?
Ideally, I would have had my paperwork, the evidence to support my claim in my hand, and I would have also recorded the conversation. Because I believe that it's going to be a pattern with him from the first day that I met him, which was over a year and a half ago. I told my attempted spouse that I believe he's going to practice racism, and I suspect him of being a racist from the first day I met him. But our interactions have not been. So I would have just had the evidence with me, and I would have also not have giggle gaggle. I would have just come in, hey, where's my money? Just be blunt with it. And I could deal with the blunt situation than the, I got to be sweet to you, kind of him and hawing. I feel that my qualification could have been tighter by not allowing him to make that talk with me, that little chit-chat that really kind of threw me off. From preparing, and then the desperation was my end move, was just the desperation of getting between him and the door. I would have rather have not had to do that, but it had to be done.
Outstanding. I think sometimes racists do that sort of thing. They enjoy keeping us off balance. In a variety of different ways, but I think that's one of them. Might even be what Neil Postman talking about, where you shift the semantic environment and you go from talking all nice and friendly, oh, how's your family, and you don't, yeah, you just had a child, and oh yeah, I'm not going to pay you for the work, right? Just, and it can completely kind of disarm you in terms of, well, wait a minute, I thought you were concerned about my family. Now you're not even going to pay me for the work that we've done, like. Just being codified, and like I've been saying consistently, in terms of us just expecting, particularly given this guy's pattern of behavior. I'm just going to expect that you're going to continue to be trifling and racist. So I'm going to behave accordingly and have as much ammunition as I possibly can. And I guess I would remind, since we technically speaking, she was talking about having a recorder, and caller just dialed in, said he would have recorded the conversation with this guy who's trying to get out of paying him. It might be a good idea to practice. If you have a recorder or thinking about purchasing one, I know some listeners have said that since they've been listening to Workplace Racism that they've purchased a recorder, practice using it so that you can be in a habit so that you can do it quickly and without detection. Because I know some folks have the wrist unit where you have to like double tap it or whatever it is and it starts to record, or other people are using their phone, or if you have a pen or whatever type of gadget you have, make sure you practice. That's what codification is. Practice so it's quick, it's seamless, and you can do it that way, even regardless of what happens within a few seconds. Bang, you can be recording and nobody is the wiser. Other folks have commentary that they wanted to share, either on what we've heard thus far, recommendations if you have been accused of not smiling enough. We have thoughts on that as well, or if you have personal commentary, feel free. I'm sorry, I did.
Can I be heard?
Yes, sir.
Greetings, everyone. Kind of like just tuned in about 10, 15 minutes ago at a game tonight, which is actually workplace. but I did hear some pretty good, insightful information on workplace racism. I heard one of the callers, female caller, that was talking about on her codified mission, which is to work with young people. And I would, you know, give her kudos because the children actually look forward to people like her that were just there to help them get better. They look at that teacher, that white woman, as, you know, someone who is doing the exact opposite, trying to fail them. And with her coming along, I know she's like a, and I guess I have to use the metaphor, breath of fresh air, to you know, hey, I'm here to help. I'm here to make your day a little bit nicer and help you get along. So when you get out of high school, get out of school, that you'll be prepared to pursue a job correctly through science and math. So that's a very good thing. To the male caller who is a business owner, kudos go to him also, because like I think I heard him say, is that you kind of like got to have your codification very sharp, very on point, and concise. So things like that, when they happen, when it goes wrong, that you will know what to do. And because some situations, especially with a person who, quote unquote, is their own business, it can be quite dangerous. I can recall hearing like entertainers, such as James Brown or some other, they will go in some of those venues, and the proprietor would hint that they're not going to pay them for various reasons not doing that thing. They would even pull out guns to the point. So it could be very dangerous at some point, you know, and that's why, you know, having your own business is really a tough situation that you support non-white black persons. It's a very, very tough situation, and he's right about being concise with his codification, and it's something, you know, I'm that's very interesting to hear, you know, that sort of thing, and it just comes to my mind, you know, coaching is my job that I still have, although I retired from the fire department, and if anybody wondered, what does a retired firefighter do when a national anthem plays? Well, actually, for about 30 years, I've been not standing for the national anthem. Even while I was a firefighter, although I would be off duty, I would not stand for the national anthem again. It is at least 30 years ago. Now what I do is just go to the locker room and don't come out for it. So that's what I do during that period of point in time. Well, that's all I have to say. And thank you, and I'll continue listening. And good, insightful program. Keep it going.
Appreciate that, retired firefighter. Live from Florida. Florida once again. If we have other folks who had a hand up, either had commentary that they wanted to share, if we had insight on what to do about the smiling, not smiling, rather, at work accusation, or if you had your own commentary you wanted to share, feel free. Line should be open.
Yes, can I be heard?
Yes, sir.
Greetings to Gus, all the listeners and callers. So it's kind of hard for me to stay consistent with the updates because of my lifestyle and then working. But I'm trying my best to stay with the program and stick with it. So I have a update. I called in 2 weeks ago in reference to white people suspecting that I don't like white people. And on that Friday, I went to work and I took some advice. I tried to be more cordial with the white people and talk to some of them. And I got to admit, I felt extremely odd. I felt out of place, and I kept asking myself, like, why am I trying so hard? I know that these people do horrible things to non-white people. They probably really don't like me, but they just want me to give in and smile and say hi to them and talk to them and stuff like that. So during this whole day that I'm talking to these white people, I'm feeling extremely awkward. And out of nowhere, wiping some bumpers off that hasn't been installed on the truck yet. So I'm wiping the bumpers off so that way when they go through the painting process, they can be they won't have any specs or anything on it, and the paint could go on smoothly. A painter comes behind me, and there's a white guy that's in front of me that I'm talking to. Painter comes behind me and called me a shoeshine boy. While I'm dusting off getting the dust off the bumpers that came from the stock area right before they get installed and go through the painting process. And when he called me a shoeshine boy, I almost lost it, but I did it. I waited a few seconds. I did a count in my head. This is something that I learned in therapy that I mentioned before. So I did a 10 count, and then I said to the guy, I was like, wow, I didn't know that they had shoes here. And then he was like, huh, huh, like that, and walked away. And the guy that was standing in front of me walked away, and I just continued doing my job. It didn't bother me as much. It bothered me at first when he first said it, because I wanted to react right then and there, but it didn't bother me as much because when I started to think about it, I said to myself, I have to prepare myself for the moment that I'm called the nigger, so that way I know how to handle myself the proper way and don't get myself in greater confinement or even worse, get myself killed. And that's pretty much my update. And I didn't hear, I just called in pretty late, so I didn't hear what happened to in reference to someone smiling on the job.
Oh,
so I guess I could comment on that later. Oh, go ahead.
It was a black male in sales, important context, in sales, where he said he was, I guess, questioned or somehow it was verbalized. You don't smile enough. You should smile more. And I said that seems like an accusation that is commonly lobbed at black people. So if folks have suggestions on how you would handle, how you would respond to that accusation, that would be helpful.
Well, if it sells like retail stores and stuff like that, I remember when I worked at Sporting Goods store Models. I did have a black male supervisor say that to me before. And at that time, I really didn't like my job as much because I had applied for the supervisor job that I didn't get. So I didn't like coming to work often. So anytime he asked me why am I not smiling, I just told him, oh, I wasn't feeling well today or I had a bad day, but I'll try my best to smile the next time the next customer come in. And that was pretty much it. I think with retail, they kind of expect you to be more of a people's person, if that makes sense. But not everybody smiles. I mean, I go on Walmart and places like that where the white people, they just help you out and just go about their business. But it is quite often that I do see black people smiling more frequently than white people.
Dan Freeman, I was reminded of that when Emmy was giving her commentary on the smiling in the workplace accusation. And she was saying, you know, hey, maybe you smile a little bit more, and that if that minimizes the problem, then that's easy enough. Maybe that's what to do. Dan Freeman, I think he did do quite a bit of smiling to carry out his mission. Spook Who Sat by the Door. I think we read that about this time last year. Anywho, other folks, if you dialed in, if you have a hand up, if you have commentary on anything that has been shared thus far, or if you have your own situation that you'd like to touch on, line should be open. Proceed.
Can I be heard really quick, Gus?
Emmy,
I have a question.
Yes, ma'am.
For the gentleman that just spoke, so when you counted to 10, was it like 1-1,000, 2-1,000? And if so, did that white person really stand there for the whole 10 seconds waiting for you to say something back?
I think I mentioned before a while back, I used to go to therapy and talk about racism. And the therapist, she wasn't that much helping, but some of the things that she told me was helpful. So, yeah. I just count it like 1, 2, 3. Like I'll take like a deep breath in between. Only that's how I started off doing it. Only like this particular time he said that, I did like a quick 10 count. I calmed down immediately. And yes, he did stand behind me. In fact, he said it twice. He said, "Shoeshine boy. Ha ha ha. Shoeshine boy." And the gentleman that, well, I wouldn't call him a gentleman. The white guy that was standing in front of me, he walked off. And in fact, the white guy that was standing in front of me was the one white guy who asked, was I the guy that didn't like white people to a white person? So I guess if he wanted to know why I don't like white people or I don't like white people, that's enough reason. And since that day, I haven't been trying to be like too friendly to white people. I just went back to regular old me. I mean, I don't have a problem with speaking with them, but carrying out conversations, that I don't do.
Great. I just wanted to say real quick on that, appreciate that question, Emmy. If you don't feel comfortable chatting, if it didn't feel comfortable, and this is, you know, what ended up happening on the day when you were making an earnest effort to converse more with them, hey, do what is natural and that that's minimize conversation, minimize contact, and just go about your business in a professional manner. And you speak when spoken to. A+. You are overqualified to know what you're dealing with in that environment of terrorism. I think for even with what happened, right? Him, you know, Shoeshine boy and all that. And that's a great opportunity where you can pull out and flagrantly document. Like, Shoeshine boy, that's what you said? Date, time, boop, boop, write that down and then put it back in your pocket. That's another one that can work great for stopping that behavior in the workplace. But even with that, I still would be adamant. I have never said that I don't like white people. I didn't say that when he made the comment about Shoeshine boy and the other things. I didn't get up and say, I don't like you white, or that's why I don't like you white. That's not what I said. I just wrote it down in my notebook that it was said. Even then, I would make sure, because I have seen, or I could easily see how in a system of white supremacy that sort of charge can end up being very harmful for a black person in a workplace environment. So even with that, nope, I never said that. And, you know, that's not something to joke about, ladies, gentlemen. Did folks have any comments, questions, what we've heard thus far, or any their own situation they wanted to address? Line should be open.
Can I be heard?
Yes, sir.
Yep. Greetings, everyone. Gus, I'm the one that written in about a month ago, so I want to give a little follow-up I was the one that wrote about one of the suspected racists commenting about my hair being long. And so just as a follow-up there, you know, one of the things that I did while that conversation was going on was what I heard you say quite often, have others have said, you know, Fuller and others say, about asking questions. So every time he said something about my hair and about any other comments, and I would come back and just say, so what does that mean? And so what do you mean by that? And I was saying it loud enough so that others in the other joining cubicles could hear me. And then sooner or later, you know, he changes subjects and then kind of walks off. But since then, I never heard anything else about my hair from him ever again. And it's been over a month now. We pass each other in the hallways quite often, but he's never made any comments. Before then, it was almost like every other time he would see me, he would say something, you know. But again, just as a counter-racist behavior to ask questions. And that, to me, that was a an answer to changing his behavior, to not come at me like that again. And so asking questions and saying it out loud so others can hear you, if there's others around, that worked for me in this situation. Wanted to share another experience that, you know, in that same workplace, that same individual is a manager to others. And one of those that he's a manager of is of an Eastern Indian individual. And I think I heard you say it before, somebody heard someone else say it before, where when racists are, you know, where they don't really give you that respect, so they'll just call you anything if your name is, if they either difficult to pronounce or they just don't want to pronounce it, they'll just call you whatever they want to call you. And I see this happening with the same individual towards the Indian fellow. They'll just, you know, they give him this nickname or shortened version of his name. And again, the Indian guy, he's, you know, he'll go along with it, smiles and laughs along with it, you know. But again, I definitely see that type of behavior where, you know, everyone calls him this name now. So I asked him one day, I says, you know, so how do you pronounce your name? And he told me specifically, I says, you know, and I said it carefully, slowly, so I make sure, is that how you pronounce it? Is that correct, how it's pronounced? He said, yeah. I said, so when everybody calls you this, that's not how you pronounce your name. He says, well, no, it's not. I said, so what does your name really mean? And he told me what it meant, that it meant something on the lines of being, you know, a respectable person or something like that. So I said, so every time they say that, they're not respecting you then. And he just kind of, you know, kind of laughs and says, yeah, you're right, you know. So, you know, again, it's that same individual who's the manager to this Indian that, you know, mispronounces his name, gives him this nickname, calls him that all the time. Yeah, everyone calls him this name. So that's another scenario. So this same Indian person, here they are at a company picnic type event after work, and then they're bringing out the booze and all. And again, I heard you say it more than once, you know, once people start drinking, watch out. Okay? So here they are sitting around. I'm just kind of observing after hearing, you know, you say that a few times, and it's like, okay, let me just kind of observe. So I'm kind of from a distance, kind of observing. And so here's the Indian fellow sitting there amongst the other whites. He's the only Indian. All the rest are white, and they're laughing about his accent, you know, and he's just kind of sitting, taking it in, laughing along with them. One of the white guys reaches across the table, grabs his beer bottle, puts his finger on top of the beer bottle, mouth of the opening of the beer bottle, and kind of shakes it up and kind of puts it back down in front of them. And they're all kind of laughing and all about it. You know, again, where it's that when they start drinking, here comes the mistreatment, you know. Even, you know, mistreatment even before they start drinking. And then once they start drinking, it just comes out even more, you know. One other quick scenario is concerning my son. He was working at a restaurant, predominantly white, group of employees there, a few other blacks. Long story short, a girl, white girl, makes comment about him, you know, how cute he is to another worker. So, and another young man, white young man, who has interest in this girl. They didn't get along after a while. They broke up, whatever. He ends up, he ends up, yeah, there you go, right? He ends up leaving the job, the white young man ends up leaving the job. My son still works there, was still working there. He comes in during the time when my son is working, sitting around the bar with other white people, and he just yells out and calls my son's name, says, you know, hey, so how do you like working amongst all these white people? You know, and my son is kind of like, you know, my son was telling me, he says, well, you know, I just kind of like, yeah, you know, I'm just chilling, you know, and just kind of walked off, kind of played it off. And so, again, there's another type of scenario where, you know, I tried to explain to my son after what he told me, and I said, well, now I want you to think about that man, that young man, becoming a cop, becoming a supervisor, becoming a teacher, you know, becoming a coach, whatever it may be. Think about him in a leadership position with a black person working for him. Now, how do you think he's going to treat that black young man? You know, so that's why I try to get my son to understand and try to develop a code for himself. But those are a few things I just wanted to share with you. Okay, appreciate you for listening.
Developing a code, very, very important. Developing a code on how you're going to conduct yourself on a job, super important. Did folks have any comments, questions they wanted to get in? Much obliged for sharing. Any comments, questions folks wanted to get in? Those white chicks are dangerous on the job. Woo! And in those situations, I think it was a bar, I thought, where this happened, where this guy came in and asked him, being terroristic, like, oh, man, like, man, that is not a safe environment at all. Once white people and liquor start flowing, man, it can get dangerous. Not just, you know, downright trashy. It can and frequently is dangerous, violent. I mean, you want to know where the exits are, and if you can get out of that entirely, like, I got, you know, something to do. I got overdue library books, you know, I got to work on my taxes or that. I got to get my Christmas shopping, like anything, you know, got to get my Halloween decorations up, anything. I can't be at the bar because I know it's going to be some shenanigans. Asking questions, I think, also very important. The situation you talked about with the non-white male Indian coworker who was there, where they were mispronouncing his name. Absolutely. That's something we've talked about billions of times. We talked about that, just having self-respect, black self-respect, to correct people. This is the correct way to say my name every time. And just the importance of asking questions, what you're able to do on the job, the same method that you use that stopped them from questioning you about your hair, the same method you used with this Indian coworker to just walk through, you know, they're practicing racism, being disrespectful every time that they call you something other than your name, or they're deliberately, you know, mispronouncing your name. Just asking questions. That is one of the best methods that you can use on the job. Just asking questions. And sometimes just asking questions about things that they have said so that you get understanding. Make sure that I, you know, am clear about what you said. Everybody's on the same page, as they say. Number again, 641-715-3640. The code 564-943-pound. Press *61 if you would like to participate. And I think we heard that word observe again. Word for the program, perhaps. Be observant while you're on the job. Other folks have comments, questions. They want to make sure they get in. Line should be open. Please proceed.
Goss.
Stacy in the UK, hanging in tough with us. 3:14 a.m. Friday morning.
I don't actually have much of a personal update because I've not been in the office. I've been on holiday this week. I actually physically haven't been in the office for the best part of a month now, for various reasons to do with this grievance. And I must say, for me, that's been especially this week, because I actually took it as annual leave, an opportunity to just rest. And I didn't appreciate just how tired I was. And I know that you often, and others often, talk about the need for self-care. Reiterating that point that, you know, taking time away from the office is really important, as well as other ways of ensuring that we are maintaining a balance away from the workplace. But I did want to just go back on the, the who was being accused of not liking white people and being called a shoeshine boy, and just linking that again to the caller who was being told that they don't smile enough in the office. I mean, I do think the person who was called a shoeshine boy, the way he didn't react to that was really well done, because, you know, that's obviously really it's designed to cause an emotional reaction, and did well not to respond to it in the way that the person hoped for. So it's, you know, I guess you can walk away actually being very amused by that, and they clearly didn't get what they were hoping for. But you made the connection to the Dan Freeman Spook Who Sat By The Door episode, and I was actually going to make the link as well, particularly in the first where you did the book study and the very first program where that book was covered. I think that's the most useful for the codification. And every now and then I do like to go back and listen to those programs just as a reminder of ways in which we can just refresh our approach to being codified in the workplace. But also, it's the point about racist being quite able to be nice when they are, or they do not like us, and they are practicing racism and using it as a tool to support an end goal, which ultimately will be to either, you know, get you out of that workplace or undermine you on a particular project or whatever the mission is. Whereas, you know, we struggle with being nice and we attach emotion to it when clearly they don't. So I guess my advice would be to find a way to detach yourself from the actual act of smiling at people in the workplace. And I'm not saying that I am always 100% perfect at this, because I definitely am not. But I, and you know, there are times when I definitely do not smile with people, because particularly in my situation where they've been very aggressive towards me, I'm not going to pretend that everything is okay by smiling. However, you know, where there is people who you just really don't know, or they are just your co-workers and you know they've got a mission in mind to undermine you because you are being watched, just detach the emotion from it and just do as they do. They are quite able to smile, laugh, and appear really nice when they are being quite the opposite. And so I just think that in general, I think we need to find a way of detaching the emotion from it and developing that way of interacting as part of that workplace skill set. Obviously, if you're in a sales job, it's quite different. You know, you are, well, in fact, as I think has been said anyway, in most jobs, you are being required to interact with other people in some way, shape or form. Now, I don't know whether they are making a distinction between how this individual is with customers as opposed to work colleagues, and it may be that they're talking about work colleagues as opposed to customers. But again, yeah, just remove the emotion from it. yeah, not much of an update this week, Gus. As I said, I've been out of the office. I'll mute my line there.
Self-care, very important. Self-care, very important. Appreciate that from Stacy in the UK. And again, just having a code about that smile thing, just figuring out which environment that you're in. And then, as she said, just having a skill set and a mindset, a counter-racist mindset for how we operate in the workplace. And again, understanding, I think, is technically speaking said, this is the plantation. This is the system of white supremacy. So I'm not going to be stunned about any sort of racist activity. Not that I'm accepting it. I'm just prepared for it. And these are the responses that I'm going to take to try to stop this successfully. Other folks, comments, questions that they wanted to get in?
Gosh, technically speaking here again, if I can.
Yes, ma'am.
I just wanted to share some other things that I've learned from being in these corporate environments facing these scenarios. As I said, I've been meaning to call in for several months, actually. But one thing that's helped me is trying to find roles where there's less visibility. And this might help for people who are dealing, or they know they have a personality where they don't want to be smiling and talking with a lot of people. I'm definitely like that at times, even though I can go both ways. But I found that it's been helpful for me is to find roles that don't have as much visibility, like working on a third shift, perhaps. That's usually where the top management isn't around. You know, there's just not a lot of people going back and forth. It's quiet in some of my work environment. So that's really worked well for me. So somebody who is, you know, young, maybe starting their career or looking for a new job, or, you know, somebody who's trying to transition into a place where they could feel more at peace, they might look for roles where there's less visibility. And that really works for me because I'm not really seeking like kudos from upper management or any kind of, I'm not expecting any kind of rewards other than just what I signed up for as far as compensation. So I don't really want to be in the spotlight. And then the other thing is, one thing that's helped me is to find ways to use the inherent racism that you find in the workplace to your benefit. So like for me working in technology, there's been times I've worked for organizations where they're so racist that I've been hired on the team, but they won't give me any important jobs to do or any important tasks, or they just, I don't know. Sometimes they just want all the spotlight. I think it is. They want to be the people who are seen as knowing everything and doing everything and accomplishing everything. So they want to take that shine, so to speak, for themselves. And me being the type of person where I don't feel like there's any other trinkets that I need to try to get from racist white supremacists other than the compensation I signed up for, I've been able to use that time, that extra time that I've had because of my field being technology, to obtain more certifications or surf the SharePoint site and find information and learn more, or like, again, observe more of what is happening on these projects that I might not know about and be able to use it to my benefit later. And then the last thing I want to say is that we talked about like minimizing contact. One thing I notice about racist white supremacists, and again, I work in technology, so sometimes I work around a lot of elitist white people. And one thing I've observed from being around them is that they can be perceptive about where you are in your level of self-respect. And I find that they tend to not be as willing to attack you when they feel like you're self-respecting and you're not intimidated. I think that might be just part of the way people operate. Another thing is when they get in crowds with each other, they seem to be emboldened. So I try to stay away from when they're in crowds with each other. And I try to just handle them like, you know, one at a time, but not in a private space. But maybe if I'm going to, it's maybe a room full of people, but we're at a cubicle alone in a sense. But again, I'm saying stay away from private spaces as much as you can. But if I do interact with them, I try to interact one at a time in a room full of people or something like that. And I like what the gentleman said. He said about asking questions back. Like if someone says something off the wall, you know, just I find it just saying something like, excuse me? Like, you know, giving them the, like, repeat that again so you can hear yourself say something stupid. Sometimes that just puts them off because it's like a self-respect thing. Like, I just don't believe you said that. And he also said the like I don't understand what you mean, because white supremacists a lot of times when you come to them they'll play dumb too to get you over explaining and put you on guard. And so I find that that tactic sometimes works for me as well. Thank you guys.
Great job. That's again. Oh, I'm sorry. Was somebody gonna comment?
Yeah, I'm sorry. I was just going to say that everything that she mentioned is 100% true. When they sense that you have like a self-respect about yourself, they do kind of try to stay away from you, and when they're around you, be a little bit more serious. This incident with the white guy calling me Shushan boy, this is because I just switched shifts. And I'm pretty sure that this guy, like the painters, they have no idea who some of the workers are, whether you're on the production floor, whether you're repairing the trucks, or whether you're just in the material area. So, yeah, everything she said actually made a whole lot of sense. And there's a lot of stuff that I went through that I took a pay cut just to get off the production line. So it's like no contact with a lot of the people. That cut out a lot of the nonsense there. Where I'm just dropping off the material and then I'm going back to my area while I'm on a forklift or like moving around and stuff like that. So I'm not in one area where they can just torment me all day. So yeah, everything she said was spot on. It sounded like I started to wonder if she worked at my job or not, but she said that she's in a different field. So yeah, go ahead, Gus.
That similarity, it just corroborates what it means to be white, that it doesn't matter what field you're in. That's why we had some of the audio clips. They were of black people on the other side of the world. That's why Stacy is with us nearly 4 a.m. participating in workplace racism. They do the same types of things, regardless of what field it happens to be, regardless of what part of the world is. That's just what it means to be white. And that's why I said you can expect some of these things to happen and reduce your stress, because you already know these are the types of things that they tend to do on the job. So I can already be prepared. I won't be surprised. Oh, right on time. That's what I thought Ned was going to do today. Mm-hmm. Get my notes, get my recorder, or, you know, however you're going to respond. That word observe, very important, though. Do we have other folks who either had their own situation that they wanted to touch on, or if you had your own commentary, other folks, anything they wanted to make sure they get in, make sure we're not missing people?
Yes, I'd like to add another situation, but there's others I want to chime in first, so I don't mind. Go ahead.
Let's see. Did we? Oh, was that you, Princess? Did we hear you?
Yes. Good evening. I was calling in to share an update on my workplace situation. For people who may not be familiar with my issue, I had started back work from being off of medical leave back in February of this year with my company. And from the time I started working at the branch in Ocala, another location out here in Ocala, I had went through nothing but trouble. And for whatever reason, on this occasion, if anybody followed my situation from New Orleans, the one time that I didn't bother to contact our corporate department is the one time where I was singled out and they assumed that I was the one that contacted corporate, even though I would have been in my legal right to as an employee. But nonetheless, I never did. I was trying to handle the situation locally. So I was moved to this other store with this black female store manager. And because of her severe victimization, instead of her looking at the situation one-on-one with me, she went off of what this white male district manager had to say about me. And it was nothing but issues until I finally had to contact corporate on her months back. So since then, it's been a war of attrition between her and I. And, like I said, everything kind of calmed down, but I was already, I always keep myself on alert. Well, anywho, I've been on vacation since Sunday. And, I received a call I received a call from one of my employees, and initially I received a text from one of my employees where she was saying that I needed to call her. So I called her. Basically, she told me that the store manager, as of Saturday, will be her last day at that store location. They've decided to go ahead and move her and transfer her to another store. So when this other person had contacted me, who I'm not real cool with, but again, I have to play things with certain people that I know who are part of the problem. She had called me to let me know, and of course I had to play like I didn't know, but she basically was letting me know what was going on and blah, blah, blah. But for me, overall, I look at it as a victory for me, because just in the last week, she's been trying to block me from working towards getting into our pharmacy department. So I look at it as a positive thing, because the pharmacy manager wants me to go back there, and she didn't want this other representative to be back there, because she knew she was going to be a bunch of problems, because she only wants to go back there because it's a guy that she likes, and it's just been crazy stuff going on between her and this guy. But nonetheless, I just look at it as a plus, because now I'll be able to start anew with a whole new person, even though this person, I believe, is a white male that's going to be the store manager. But a lot of the favoritism and all the craziness that she's had going on at this store will be over and dealt with real soon. So, other than that, like I said, it's just where I'm located at, I deal with a lot of people who classify themselves as Latinos or Puerto Ricans. And like I said, I'm only really, really close with one particular lady, simply because she's had my back in a lot of situations, as well as I have hers. But like I said, my policy has always been since I worked at Comcast is, you know, by default, I consider them as, you know, functioning white people until proven as wise. And, but, so that's the reason why I have the, you know, I have to go about things with people who are classified like that on a case-by-case basis. That was just an update.
Outstanding, Princess. Codification. Just, hey, this is a problem that I'm dealing with. I'm going to figure out a solution until proven otherwise, until I get evidence. I will assume that you are a racist, that you're classified as white, and then we'll go along and see if we get information that shows that, oh, perhaps you are not classified as white. Outstanding. That's what we're supposed to be doing, figuring out our codification so we can solve problems and help make sense of some of the things that we are seeing. Is that usual? If you're out or if you're an employee, do they call and notify you if somebody is being transferred to a different location? Is that standard operating procedure?
No. And as far as the first person that contacted me, she just wanted to give me a heads up because she knew I had already made mention of that this would come down the pipeline. And I believe it's because of the store's scores as far as her management ability. We just did a corporate survey, and apparently, I guess she thought that people was gonna, you know, vote, give her a positive review, and apparently, you know, that didn't happen. But the girl who, the second person who had contacted me about it, who I'm not really cool with because she's friends outside of work with the store manager, and she's the one that my store manager has been trying to now push all of a sudden to go into pharmacy when I'm a member of management, and we just had a district meeting about, you know, us managers getting state certified. And so now all of a sudden when I come back from the meeting and, you know, go and talk to the store manager about, you know, me starting to work on my training, cross training to get my certifications and stuff, all of a sudden she wants to promote and push this individual into pharmacy to block me. So now that she's no longer going to be at that store. Now, I guess the girl is kind of scared because the other manager that she really doesn't get along with, she's afraid of him going to this new store manager and telling him, you know, all the dirt on her. So, well, and that's what she confided in me. And I, you know, just played like, oh, don't worry. But I think too, it's just, because I guess it threw her into shock because, like I said, she was friends with the store manager outside of work. So, you know, it was a lot of favoritism. Whenever there was extra hours, she always made sure that they got the hours that they needed. And, you know, these three individual people that she always catered to. And that's the source of the reason why they, you know, people throughout the store was complaining about and gave her poor reviews on her leadership qualities. So it's just chickens coming home to roost.
as they say, appreciate
no, that's a metaphor.
This is not the compensatory call in. I do not say anything about metaphors on this program. Context of white supremacy. Much obliged for the update, Princess. There was a male caller. We have about 20 minutes left in the program. There was a male caller who was going to share something before Princess gave us the update. The male caller, if you had commentary, proceed.
Yes, this was the same caller that spoke a little bit earlier about the situation with the suspected racist commenting about my hair. So I wanted to give another scenario at the job there. But again, if there's others that wanted to comment, who hadn't had a chance to, I don't mind just kind of letting them go ahead.
Oh, okay. Anybody else that we missed? Anybody else that has a hand up that we that have not heard from at all? Nab everyone, everybody who had a hand up, did we get to them already?
Can you hear me?
Yes, Thomas in New York.
How you doing, Gus? How's everyone doing? I just wanted to share some scenarios, some workplace racist scenarios I've witnessed. Last week, I go to work, and I'm talking to the security guard, and you know, this is as my shift begins at 11 p.m. And, you know, this white female walks in. She works in the psych ER. And she looks like she should be a patient. You know, she has a look to her. Or like ex-substance abuse, you know, person. But, it, you know, it could just be her look, you know. Either way, I've observed that she's... very much into this black male that I'm speaking to on past occasions because he's security and generally they have to go into that office space to stay in there for a while. However, I asked him before, he's like, yo, he's not in, man. I would never, you know, like, you know, he's not interested in her. But she walked in the other day and it got a little chilly in this area. So she had on a Scully, but the Scully hat had on Mickey Mouse ears. So when she walked in, he said, he made a joke like, hey, look at her looking like Mickey Mouse, you know. So she walks over to the desk, she laughs, and it's just me, him, and another black male, one of my co-workers, standing there talking to the man. And she says, oh, you mad that I don't look like these hood rat chicks that you're used to dealing with? So I had walked away at that point, like, oh, that's too much, you know. So when I came back, I was like, man, you didn't peep that? He said, yo, I peeped that. I thought of you as soon as she said it. Like, I was, you know, exactly why I walked away. But white people are not ignorant. You know, I mean, how do they know what a hood rat is if they're ignorant? Either way, same gentleman. And this falls along the lines of workplace. Well, it happened at the workplace, but it's just a general racist scenario. He the same gentleman as a security guard, he also does security at a club, and he likes to have the videos recorded of him removing people from the club. It's like he gets him a look at this, man, look what I did yesterday, man, I had to throw this dude out. So it's always a lot of anti-blackness, you know, as far as I'm concerned. However, in the hospital, there's so much stuff that goes on. Security generally called to handle the situation. So I was put in a situation where I had to clean the emergency room lobby, and that's generally done at 5 a.m. So I got there at 5 a.m. to do it. And when I got there, and like I said, it got a little chilly out here, I realized that it was about five or six men in the waiting area asleep. Probably because they were homeless and didn't want to go outside. So my plan was to kind of work around them because I don't generally like to tell security to remove the homeless people unless I see one white person, I'll mess it up for everybody. Y'all all got to go. But, you know, if I see all black people, I'll clean around them so they don't have to leave and won't tell security to remove them. However, security went out to remove the guys without me letting them know. They just looked and saw. So I heard the arguing. Either way, the same security guard comes out, and one of the guys said he's not going nowhere, and it turns into a huge fight. So I'm trying to break it up. Now, at this point, you know, I don't want to see these two brothers fighting. Obviously, this brother has some mental illness problems. So, you know, he's, like, just whamming him on top of his head with the walkie-talkie, and the other one's holding him down. I mean, it was, I'm trying to stop them from doing it, trying to talk the guy like, man, just go outside, just leave. But then, you know, he ended up saying he dropped something, so everyone's going in to look for it. Either way, the police were there because we had a child abuse case, and they were probably about eight cops. It was a terrible case. I don't want to get into it, but, you know, either way, they came out, they grabbed the guy, they lifted him up, they threw him out on the sidewalk in front of the hospital.
He had a bike out there. Either way, about 30 minutes later, this gentleman still refused to leave from the premises of the front of the hospital. He didn't want to leave until he confronted the guy who initially started the fight with him. So the cops called this guy outside. And like, hey, we going in. You do what you got to do. And it was like, is this serious? You know, so I'm like, man, don't go out there. You know, I'm trying to talk him out of it. But, you know, just let these niggas fight. That's how I took it, you know, sort of like the candy plantation where they had the two brothers fighting to the death. And they were just going to walk away and let it happen. I just thought that was terrible. And that same day, and this is, man, this white, well, he's someone who you would call Latino or Hispanic, I guess, by the definitions white people classify people by. However, this one is very fair, in my opinion, because in certain situations pass for being white. And they had a meeting, and this was the shift before I came in. But this is what I heard when I came in to the job that night. And they had a meeting, and the new head of the new president of the hospital, who just started, and the old president who he was replacing, they brought him down to meet the staff and to talk to people and talk about ways they're going to go forward moving with his, under his directive and things of that nature. So either way, when this Spanish, well, this that guy I was just telling about, you know, I try not to use Latino and Hispanic, but it's a descriptive word to describe who I'm talking about. He walks in and he makes a comment to the effect of, oh, one of y'all stink. Now, why would you walk into an office with the new president of the hospital, our director, our manager, and make that comment? It doesn't fit well with me. It's like you were trying to start something. However, a black male, anti-sexual black male, jumps in his face. Yeah, you trying to say I stink, and it, you know, I'll F you up, and it just turned into this whole big thing. So this man gets removed from the premises and possibly lost his job behind this. And I just looked at it like, you know, white people starting stuff. Even though this guy isn't white, but I believe he could pass for white, and he does in his general everyday dealings of life. I mute my line. Thank you.
Wow. Just, you know, say again, really important for black people, for us to keep our composure. Whites, individuals who practice racism, white supremacy, and just anti-blackness in general is so rampant worldwide. And I certainly understand, you know, people, particularly when things just happen suddenly, unexpectedly like this, like with this sort of situation. But even still, I think we really just, in my opinion, it would behoove us to just never be stunned, surprised, alarmed, caught off guard to the point that, you know, we just become really emotional with regards to how we respond to these sort of instances. This is racism, white supremacy just being demonstrated again. And it will happen, you know, again and again and again. Just real important, in my opinion. Do we have any other folks who had commentary that they wanted to make sure that they got in? Black self-respect in making an effort, Thomas in New York, for making that effort to try and go out and intervene with the conflict between the black people. Black self-respect. I know a lot of folks would have just said, forget it, you know, not going to get involved. But for sure, I appreciate the effort. Do we have other folks who had commentary they wanted to get in last 10 minutes or so before we wrap things up?
Can I be heard?
Yes, sir.
Awesome. This is Ken Steele, and I am currently in Chino, California. And I just wanted to contribute this week by saying that in light of all of the stories that are emerging from this part of the world, more specifically the area known as Hollywood. There's just been a number of stories about sexual abuse and a lot of misconduct. And upon reflecting on those stories, I gotta say one thing that I've noticed about I guess, entertainment in this part of the world is that everybody in this part of the world that's working, that I've run into in this entertainment industry, seems to be where they're at because they agreed to it on some level. There is so many forms that you have to fill out to be on a proper set, to be on a proper stage, to have any sort of professional relationship with a number of the people that will approach you in this space, that people are agreeing to do a lot of things in exchange for their careers. One line that I would suggest that anybody wanting to enter into entertainment, and this goes to victims of racism and people, I guess, who aren't victimized by it, but anybody really who's trying to get into entertainment, that line is, no, I don't want to do that. And or no, I'm not going to do that. Simply saying no is something that a lot of people tend to forget that they have the option to do when going into this field of entertainment. And that's a line that can, you know, save your reputation, save your life, save your mental well-being. And then also, oftentimes, you know, the kind of bargains that have to be made to enter into this industry are just not worth it to a lot of people. The rules and the norms that are in this part of the world are, I don't even think they're that different from what I've experienced in corporate America, but I will say that it is a little less refined when it comes to how some of the people will conduct themselves. And honestly, people over here will only oftentimes only try to get away with what you allow them to get away with. If you set boundaries really early, you won't be, it'll be more difficult to find yourself in a lot of compromising positions. And the moment you do stop compromising yourself, you may not find yourself with work in this industry. So, you know, you might want to pursue other avenues for making money or gaining notoriety. And I guess that's just my reflections on some of the information that's been coming out as of late and just what I've seen being out here in California in the entertainment industry. And I'll mean my life.
It would seem even beyond entertainment that might be great advice in terms of having, if you want to use black self-respect, having a code, having standards in terms of, no, this is something I'm not willing to do. Or, you know, maybe even I have a list of things I'm not willing to do. I know Dr. Welsing certainly talked about that with entertainment and saying, hey, I'm not going to hand over my black self-respect just because you're willing to give me, you know, billions of dollars or put me on this many movie screens or what have you, that, you know, black self-respect should be worth more than that. And I think even a lot of folks who are not in entertainment still end up, you know, having to compromise their self-respect a lot of times for a paycheck. So definitely having, perhaps, as I said, having that list of these are things that I'm just not going to tolerate, and I'm going to make that explicitly clear in a workplace setting immediately if need be. Last few moments, anybody have a quick comment they needed to get in? Workplace racism, anybody have anything final they need to get in?
Quickly, man, I just wanted to say, man, the technique I used to break that up was I told him, man, don't go out there and fight these people for this. Don't fight this brother for these white men, you know, and that kind of calms him down. So that did work in that instance, man, but yeah.
Outstanding, Thomas in New York. Outstanding. If you can use your counter racism, Scott, in my opinion, I've said that before, the person who is
least confused, black person that's least confused in an environment, that should be one of their top priorities, to minimize conflict between black people, because whites have done such an extraordinary job of keeping that, you know, going constantly worldwide with black people and non-white people on the whole. With that, we will wrap things up for Workplace Racism for this week. We'll be here every Thursday, 8 p.m. Eastern, 5 p.m. Pacific. Workplace Racism. We'll be here tomorrow, 8 p.m. Eastern, 5 p.m. Pacific. Book Club, session number 2, Neil Postman, Crazy Talk, Stupid Talk. We just are getting started with the text. We only did like the first 3 chapters last week, really starting to get into the meat of the text this week. Very excited book that I really enjoyed, just about the importance of words, something that certainly can be applied on the job. I forgot I was going to mention this at the top of the program. Pam, one of our favorite guests all time, on the Cal. She was supposed to be on the broadcast with us yesterday evening, but she was not feeling well. Told that we are taking turns with illness. When she was supposed to be with us this past summer, I was ill. And then now that I'm feeling better, she is not well. So we are going to give her a few weeks and see if we can try again. But I posted it on Facebook and Twitter, and lots of folks typed in their well wishes for Pam, who is certainly appreciative. But yeah, we were supposed to be here, and that is why we were not. Anywho, if you have questions, updates, contributions for Workplace Racism, guest suggestions, feel free to drop an email, untiljustice@gmail.com. untiljustice@gmail.com. Much obliged for all the folks who dialed in to participate. I hope it was worthy of your Thursday evening. Thanks for the folks who listened live and via the archives. We are on iTunes, Stitcher, SoundCloud, YouTube, Blueberry, a variety of outlets where you can download the Cal's content. Again, drop an email if you need help finding something in the archives. With that, sobriety would be best under conditions of white supremacy. Certainly, you do not want to combine alcohol and whites. That is an extraordinarily dangerous combination anywhere in the universe. I would say even if whites aren't around, sobriety would still be best. I think Dr. Welsing and many of the folks that we say we admire and regard, they would encourage and want us to preserve our mental health, physical health as best we can, and to try to preserve our brain computers so that we can crank out solutions to the problem: racist man, racist woman, racist child. With that, remain safe. And if you're going to be out and about in a vehicle, buckle up every single time. You want to be sober and buckled up, passenger and or driver. With that, Creator, we ask that you help us remain patient with other black people, victims of white supremacy. We ask that you help us remain patient with ourselves. Remind us to demonstrate the highest levels of black self-respect at all times, in all places, each and every time we are in contact with another black person. It has been time. Replace white supremacy with justice immediately. Cal signing out. Thanks all for tuning in.
Nigga, you so brainwashed.
I'm a victim, no brother.
Problem. You're a victim.
I'm a victim of 400 years of conditioning.
Shut up.
The man has programmed my condition. Mm-hmm. Even my conditioning has been conditioned.